Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. Now, tonight we have a special treat for our Prison Planet subscribers. We're going to have the world premiere of State of Mind. Stick around. It's going to be a roundtable discussion with the filmmakers and Alex Jones as we air that after the news. But first, the news. Now, if you remember when Snowden leaked the information about the PRISM program and how our information was being collected by Microsoft and a lot of other companies, the companies that were named, the companies involved, issued carefully worded denials saying they had absolutely nothing to do with it as it was depicted in the leaked top secret slides. Yet one of these companies, Yahoo, is fighting to have their name cleared and fighting to get legal due process back in this country. The U.S. government is now going to declassify Yahoo legal documents from FISA, the secret court opinion. Now, if you remember last Friday, I believe, we reported that Yahoo was suing for this information. Now they have won. This from the article from Engadget. It says Yahoo had claimed that it fought against PRISM since 2008. It's now about to land previously secret court documents to prove it. A foreign intelligence surveillance court, that would be FISA, has ruled that the U.S. Department of Justice must declassify the firm's legal briefs and the court's decision on the search giant's attempts to resist the government's request for user data. As the Daily Dot notes, this is only the second known civilian victory in a FISA Intelligence Surveillance Act, a FISA courtroom, and it follows a win by the EFF just a few days ago. So keep that in perspective. This is only two times that they've had their rulings challenged. This is not a legitimate court. This is not a court that conforms to any sort of traditional court. It's not a court that conforms to any kind of constitutional definition of a court. There is no jury. There is no opposition. Merely an appointed judge. There's only 11 of these judges that are appointed. They're appointed by the Supreme Court Chief Justice. Now, when John Roberts came in, he knew nothing about the appointments of these judges. He didn't know anything about the FISA court, according to him. When he briefed the Senate back in June, he told them basically how this worked and how surprised he was to find out that there was something like this, because it's not a real court. It's not anything that's in the Constitution. And yet, John Roberts went ahead and appointed judges. He didn't say anything about it. He didn't blow the whistle on it. It took someone like Snowden to get people aware of this. Now, this has been around for a very long time. It's been around for 33 years. And listen to this statistic. Last year alone, the FISA court heard nearly 1,800 such applications from the U.S. government. Not a single request for surveillance was denied. In its entire 33-year history, the FISA court has rejected only 11 out of 34,000 requests for information. This is basically a secret rubber stamp court. It gives the government anything that they want, and they presume then that they have legal coverage to do whatever they want because they've got this secret court that nobody knows about. We're not even entitled as the public to see these court opinions, even though they maintain that they are modifying our Constitution with these secret decisions. Nothing of the sort is really being happened. They're basically playing a mind game with themselves because this is unlawful, it's unconstitutional. And it's secretive. And that brings us to our quote of the day from James Madison. He says, "Do not separate text from historical background. If you do, you will have perverted and subverted the Constitution, which can only end in a distorted, bastardized form of illegitimate government." Boy, I tell you what, you could not have a better description of the federal government today than what James Madison foresaw. A distorted, bastardized form of illegitimate government. And FISA is the court system of that illegitimate government. It flies in the face of tradition as well as law. As he was pointing out, you cannot separate the text of the Constitution from a historical background. The historical background for the Fourth Amendment, for the Fifth Amendment, for basically our Bill of Rights as well as our judicial system, were things like the Star Chamber Court that met in England, where there were these secret hearings that were met, where you were not allowed to even know in many cases that you were being investigated, where you were called in and maybe compelled to testify against yourself, where you could not see the decisions. You merely suffered the effects of that court. Now we're back to that again because we have forgotten historical context. We've allowed people to ignore the actual text of the Constitution. But not all of our leaders are that way. We do have a few people in the Republican Party, primarily in the Democrat Party. We have Senator Ron Wyden. There's a few libertarian senators, a few libertarian congressmen, pretty much in the GOP, although they're very much in the minority. We have senators like Lindsey Graham, who is trying to, wants to prosecute Snowden on espionage. He just came out and said that he wants to boycott the Olympics being held in Russia if they even think about giving him asylum there. This person, Lindsey Graham, is up for re-election. We need to make sure that we don't return statists like him to office. Now, in an email between Snowden and, actually it was initiated by a GOP senator, former senator, Gordon Humphrey from New Hampshire, and he sent an email to Edward Snowden in The Guardian, and listen to what he said. Mr. Snowden, provided you have not leaked information that would put in harm's way any intelligence agent, I believe you have done the right thing in exposing what I regard as massive violation of the United States Constitution. Now, Greenwald wrote back to him to verify that this was, in fact, coming from the senator, and he replied back and said, yes, it was I who sent this. And he said, I wanted to thank him for exposing astonishing violations of the U.S. Constitution and encouraging him to persevere in the search for asylum. To my knowledge, Mr. Snowden has disclosed only the existence of a program and not details that would place any person in harm's way. I regard him as a courageous whistleblower. And he said, I object to the monumentally disproportionate campaign being waged by the U.S. government against Edward Snowden while no effort is being made to identify, remove from office, and bring to justice those officials who have abused power seriously and repeatedly violating the Constitution of the United States and the rights of millions of unsuspecting citizens. Well, I think Gordon Humphrey needs to get back in the political arena. I know he's retired at this point. Maybe he's not interested in getting back into politics, but we need statesmen like that who will point out that it is not Snowden that we should be going after, but the criminals who violated their oath of office, who violated the Constitution. There's no talk about that from the Justice Department, from the Obama administration, or from Republicans like Lindsey Graham and John McCain. Now, we wonder why we have people in office like Lindsey Graham. Well, people have said we get the government we deserve, and we get people like that because of ignorance and because of apathy. An amazing article out of the First Amendment Center looks at a poll where over a third of Americans, 34%, say that First Amendment goes too far in protecting rights. That's right. Over a third of the people think that First Amendment goes too far. In a survey released today by the Newseum Institute, that would be a museum of news, 34% of Americans say the First Amendment goes too far in the rights it guarantees. And that's up from 13% in last year's survey. So it jumped from 13% of the people who don't like the First Amendment, don't want freedom of speech, to 34% in just 1 year. The largest single year increase in the history of the state of the First Amendment National Survey. Americans identified freedom of speech as the most important freedom that citizens enjoy, 47%. Followed by freedom of religion, 10%, freedom of choice, 7%, and the right to vote and the right to bear arms, both 5%. So there's not much understanding of what's at stake here from the public. If they don't realize that the First Amendment is not just about other people's free speech, but it's about your free speech. You know, you can't have freedoms unless you're willing to grant them to others. And that's really what's fundamentally at stake here. People need to understand that this is their freedoms, not other people's freedoms that they have contempt for. But unfortunately, 34% of the people don't believe in free speech in this country. I imagine most of those live in Washington. Now, look at this Rolling Stone cover and look at how free speech is being used by some in the media. And maybe this is what they're objecting to. Here's a picture of Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. And look at how he's identified, not as the alleged bomber, not as the suspect, but as the bomber. Is that what people are objecting to? Are people saying that we shouldn't have free speech because of the way the mainstream media is distorting the truth? No, actually, that's not what they object to. This is what they object to. Rolling Stone's controversial Dzhokhar Tsarnaev cover ignites heated debate, says The Guardian. Why? Because it portrays him in too glamorous a light. They object to the fact that the picture of him looks too good. You see, this is the discussion that's going on in America now. And this chain store, CVS, drugstore, has said they're not going to cover, they're not going to allow that Rolling Stone magazine issue in their stores because of the cover. So everybody, because of the mainstream media, has already decided that Dzhokhar Tsarnaev is guilty, even though he hasn't even had a trial. And even though we have some interesting reports from his first appearance in court. Now, of course, there's no photographs allowed of people who show up in court. We have people saying he didn't act like himself. He didn't really look like himself. He had wounds that were still from the initial arrest, perhaps. Of course, they could still be beating him. He could be under drugs, so maybe he's not acting normally. Maybe that has altered the way he looks to former friends and colleagues, students that he went to school with. But most interesting is that a Boston reporter, Boston Herald reporter, reported that he said that he made his statement with a very heavy accent. And as a report showed, home movies of Dzhokhar Tsarnaev show that he has no accent when he speaks English. So there's a lot of stuff that's fishy about this whole Boston bombing. As InfoWars has been pointing out from day one, we believe it's a false flag. We believe these people are patsies who have been set up. And yet they have been tried and convicted in the media, so much so that it's created a stir because there's an attractive photograph of him on the cover of a magazine, and we have retail chains refusing to carry it. Now, we also have some other examples of tyranny. This is a little bit different. This is actually not government tyranny, but something that we see when Google has a monopoly. You know, we covered this quite some time ago, that one of our Operation Paul Revere entries, George Washington's Revenge, which had over 500,000 views, was suddenly taken down by Google without an explanation. And it wasn't just that that video was taken down. Off the Hook, the people who, Off the Hook TV, the people who set this up is Telly Blackwood, actually had his entire YouTube channel, his business, flushed down the memory hole because of this action. He had no legal strikes, no copyright strikes against him whatsoever on YouTube. And they took down the entire channel without warning, without explanation, even terminated his Gmail accounts. And he has told us, as he's investigating this, he's learned that up to 60 reposts of that video on YouTube have continued to be taken down. All they said was that there was a legal issue with his site, not saying exactly what it was or where it was coming from, kind of like the FISA court. But Google took down his entire channel, and they're taking down every posting of that video, even though it's a very short comedy satire. There's no copyrighted material in it, nothing that's really offensive. He's making a little bit of fun of Michael Moore and Piers Morgan. Michael Moore took some exception to that. But that's the power that Google has. Those are the people who are working hand in glove with the NSA and the surveillance state. Now, another article from Natural News, nano-sized aluminum is being sprayed in the atmosphere, causing degenerative disease, says a neurosurgeon. This broke over the weekend. In attempts to reflect sunlight away from the Earth and cool climate temperatures, this science experiment has exploited populations of people to mass amounts of airborne metals that are literally raining down and poisoning everyone, slowly and subtly. According to neurosurgeon Russell Blaylock, the nano-sized aluminum particles found in chemtrails are contributing heavily to degenerative disease today. And as the reality of geoengineering takes hold, and as the consequences mount, it's never too late to stop the madness and work together for real grassroots environmental conservation. Now, we have another Operation Paul Revere entry that focused on this very issue, on chemtrails, or as some people like to call them, persistent contrails, because they are, in fact, persistent contrails. A lot of people have a knee-jerk reaction to chemtrails. It's kind of like calling something a conspiracy theory. And they are, in fact, persistent contrails, and you can see them laid down in a grid pattern. It's something that, back in North Carolina, I never saw, but we see it all the time out here in Texas and Austin. So it seems to have certain areas where the government is doing this and other areas where they're not doing it. But we can measure the effect of aluminum, and we can see the effect on people's health, but we can see the aluminum in the soil. And this, we have a Paul Revere entry called Look Up, which is actually a documentary. And he documents these persistent contrails or these chemtrails. And he also created an app called the SKIDAR app. The SKIDAR app allows you to take pictures of the sky when this happens and send it to your congressman, you know, exercising your First Amendment rights to petition the government. So this is a great way for citizens to take action, to get involved in a grassroots environmental operation. And from what we understand, we've interviewed the creator on the nightly news before. From what we understand, this app will be extensible to other issues as well. So we look forward to seeing what's going to happen with that. Now, of course, our government would never lie to us, right? Well, you know, that's not true. We have now the Treasury Department has said that the debt has been exactly $16,699,396,000,000 for 56 days now. It's not changing. It's frozen for 56 days. They're not spending any more money, according to the federal government. This is from CNS News, and it says, the federal debt that is currently subject to a legal limit of $16,699,421,095,673.60, 60 cents, has stood at exactly $16,699,396,000,000 for 56 straight days. That means that for 56 straight days, the federal debt has remained approximately $25 million below the legal limit. I love the fact that they took the, when they set that limit, they went down to even $673.60. You don't want to round that off. Very, very precise. Thank you for setting that debt ceiling for us, Congress, and thank you to the honest government that we have that claims that it has not spent a penny for 56 days. I'm assuming that they haven't written any payroll checks, that they haven't bought anything in that amount of time, and we all know that's a lie, but we know that they're lying to us in many other ways as well. Look at the unemployment figures, for example. Every quarter, they come out with an unemployment figure that's new, and they talk about how it is better than they had expected, and things are improving. And then they also announce that the previous quarter's figures have been revised down, and they do that in a moving quarterly basis. So every quarter, they revise down the previous figures, and then pull the employment figures up to make it look better, and then they do the opposite the next quarter to make it look like there's always a positive trend, and nobody remembers that. And it goes even farther than that. Remember that the unemployment definition has changed significantly in the last decade or two. It no longer is what you and I think of unemployment figures. They have a lot of different unemployment figures that they create statistically. And remember, Mark Twain said, statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics. Well, our government lies all the time with its statistics. They play those types of games, constantly rearranging unemployment figures, telling us that they've got a debt limit when they actually are pretending that for nearly 2 months they've not spent another cent. Well, all of that falls into the category of mind control, psychological operations. Stay tuned right after the break. We're going to have the world premiere of State of Mind with Alex Jones and the filmmaking crew providing commentary right after the break. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned after the break. We'll have the world premiere of State of Mind, the psychology of control, with special commentary from Alex Jones and the crew from Free Mind Films.
Now you can watch the InfoWars nightly news streaming live as it happens for free.
Check it out at InfoWars.com/show.
Are we choosing our own paths, our own destiny, or has it been pre-selected for us?
C.S. Lewis said, when training beats education, civilization dies.
We need to always be cognizant of, as a free society, that information can be used as a weapon.
Barrier to discovery is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge.
We are seen as nothing but biological androids.
To gain control of education in America, not for a philanthropic purpose, but to change the thinking of the American people.
From the time we're very young, we're taught to, you know, worship authority, basically, because that's our key to survival as young children.
Discover the history, the present, and the future of mind control. From compulsory state education to the Hollywood media brainwashing machine, we are kept in perpetual bondage to the ideas that shape our actions.
In the CIA, scientists could actually film people who had been surreptitiously dosed with LSD.
There's a brain entrainment process that takes place.
That gives the government free rein to create whatever story or narrative it wants to create.
Whatever the public face of something is, whatever they're talking about publicly, there's something else over here they're probably not looking at.
How to engineer the opinion of the American people so that they would fully endorse, not only endorse, but demand a war.
When you watch mainline establishment television, you are putting yourself in front of the barrel of a gun.
Discover the history, the present, and the future of mind control, psychological warfare, brainwashing. Are we controlled and manipulated? You bet.
That's mind control par excellence.
Find out how deep the rabbit hole really goes with this new groundbreaking documentary film, State of Mind. Available exclusively at InfoWars.com.
Because there's a war on for your mind. That has been our motto here at InfoWars for my 18 years of battle against the globalist. And now we see the open announcements of global, private, corporate tyranny over our governments. That's what the New World Order is an unaccountable private combine of organized crime engaged in corporate takeovers of nation states and the conscious attempt to abolish basic rights and fundamental liberties. InfoWars.com is not just leading the charge against this here in the U.S. or North America. We are leading the charge worldwide. And that's because our listeners, our viewers, our supporters, fellow freedom lovers like you across the planet resonate with our message of liberty and telling it like it is. And that's why for the last 2 years especially, I have thrown everything I've got, my time, my energy, our backup capital, everything into really trying to awaken the sleeping giant that is humanity. And that's why the July issue that just came in a few days ago is so important. We've already sold about half the stock we have of it at cost in groups of 10 up to 100 in bulk. It covers the entire NSA spy grid, how it ties in worldwide, how it's not about stopping terrorists, but about suppressing and dominating and controlling the free press and political opposition. And in this magazine, we don't just have three free bumper stickers like I did a few months ago. We have 10 bumper stickers, four full-size ones with amazing messages guaranteed to get people thinking like America has been occupied by globalist forces. InfoWars.com. Listen to Alex Jones at InfoWars.com. InfoWars.com. Forbidden information. Listen to Alex Jones. InfoWars.com. And then on top of it, six medium-sized bumper stickers with the message as well. These are key to post in legal and lawful areas on your book bag, your computer, your car, or to give friends and family. I have printed 500,000 of these bumper stickers. Only half of this month's run of magazines has them. So when you purchase them in bulk or you're a 12-month subscriber, you will get the special issue. And I can't afford to do this every month, so it's going to be quite a while until we do this again. Please take advantage of this. Buy them in bulk and give them to your friends and family and encourage them to get these bumper stickers out, because with 500,000 stickers, we can reach tens of millions of people with the message of truth. They want to collectivize us. They want to bankrupt us. They want to drive us into their arms to control us. They want to dumb us down. But the sleeping giant that is free humanity is awakening. So I want to thank you all for your support. I want to encourage everybody to go to InfoWarsStore.com and to get a 12-month subscription or to give a gift subscription. Imagine 12 of these coming to your friends or family's door to wake them up. Or to give a gift subscription to the local police department or your local congressman or woman. This is how we're going to affect change, voting with our dollars and voting with our time. Again, visit InfoWarsStore.com today to subscribe, to get the magazine in bulk, or to give a gift subscription, or to give yourself a subscription to wake up friends and family. I am all in. I am committed 110% to not mince words and to not back off and to boldly confront the globalist. So I want to thank all of you that have supported us in the past, and I want to encourage all of you out there who may be on the fence that know this information is true but have been scared to take action. You had better be scared of not taking action and letting this monstrous system come to fruition. Now is the time to commit. Now is the time to say which side of history you're on. Now is the time to stand against the globalist and the New World Order. And regardless of whether you get this July issue, this July 4th resistance to tyrants issue, spread the word about liberty, resist corruption in your area. Millions of us doing little things can move mountains together. I'm Alex Jones, signing off for InfoWars.com and the InfoWars team. Johnny Appleseed was born during the Revolutionary War. He's not just a legend. And in more than five states, he introduced apples that had not even been grown in the colonies. Later, the seeds from plants he planted and cultivated and some of the varieties he developed spread across the United States. And it was Johnny Appleseed teaching the colonists and then the new Americans after we won independence the love of planting fruit trees that introduced that idea to North America. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a revolutionary act to unplug from the television, to unplug from the computer and all the globalist propaganda, and to go out in your backyard or your front yard or planters at your apartment or on the roof of the building where you live, and to plant a garden.
Become the Johnny Appleseed of your community with seeds from the InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsStore.com.
The simple act of planting fruits and vegetables and then tending them and taking care of them and then sharing them with friends and family is a revolutionary act against tyranny. The globalists, first and foremost, do not want us to be self-sufficient. The crony anti-free market capitalist, the fascist, are using socialism and collectivism to shut down societies. Stalin in Poland and in Ukraine and other areas starved on record more than 10 million people over 5 years by not letting them grow their own crops and collectivizing them. Mao killed between 65 million and 80 plus million people doing the same thing. The UN says they will use food as a weapon. They use genetic evil to attack the earth, and major GMO companies have been caught going into growth belts around the world, even where GMO is illegal, and planting seeds everywhere to infect the genetics of the original crops. Almost all of the thousands of varieties of Mexican corn has been infected. They are in a genetic war against everyone. That's why we have to get these seeds and not just plant them on our own gardens and not just give them as gifts to friends and family to plant spring and summer and fall gardens. I'm calling on you to go out into the green belts, to go out into the areas and plant secret gardens. No, not of marijuana, but of the hundreds and hundreds of incredible high quality vegetables and herbs and fruit plants that are here. Lemons and oranges, the list goes on and on. They will grow plum trees, grape trees. They will grow almost everywhere in the U.S. We can literally, not just buying these products from InfoWarsStore.com, but from wherever you get them. This aggressive program literally just came to me one morning when I woke up about 4 a.m. realizing that we've got to counter their genetic war against us with original, real crops developed over eons on this planet. We have the lowest prices. We bought it in the biggest bulk that some of these companies have ever seen to ship this directly to you from the InfoWars Command Center. We stand for life. We stand for liberty. We stand for self-sufficiency. Go to InfoWarsStore.com, click on the Seed Center, and as of taping this, we have the 7 top respected brands. We intend to continue to do research and find other companies, other specialties, other varieties to really take action.
The InfoWars Store Seed Center has the largest online selection of heirloom non-GMO seeds.
Check out these products from our newest supplier, Heirloom Organics.
The Medicine Garden for a natural remedy.
The Tea Garden that contains every important tea herb you can grow.
Fruit Lovers with 12 varieties.
And the Tobacco Pack, additive and pesticide free.
Join the gardening revolution today at InfoWarsStore.com.
This is a revolutionary action we're asking you to take. Plant seeds everywhere today. Nurture them, bring them to fruit, and pass on the knowledge to others. Become human again. Discover your roots in the soil. And remember, the revolution against tyranny is growing. And welcome back to this July 17th, 2013, Wednesday night edition of InfoWars Nightly News. I want to thank all the viewers and subscribers out there that make so much of this possible. And I would also like to encourage all people out there watching on YouTube later to be sure and pass this very important presentation and film premiere on to your friends and family. Because the film makers have done so much work. We've done a lot of work here at InfoWars as well to help bring you this information, because knowledge is power, and we're wanting to build a free society. Now, I was interviewed probably, I don't know, 6 months ago for the film State of Mind. And when I saw the final cut, I said, wow, I want to be involved in this. This is really a powerful documentary that shows the history, the present, and the future of mind control. And it's hardcore and informative, but also is very approachable to the general public. A great tool to wake people up about hidden agendas. And so we have gotten the crew here at Austin, Texas, and we've gotten them to agree to premiere this to the viewers of PrisonPlanet.tv and then ultimately to YouTube and other channels. As filmmakers who've put everything they've got into this, I really appreciate their commitment to waking up humanity. So all of us need to work to make sure that this film goes super viral. So we're premiering it here tonight. We started shipping out today for everybody that pre-ordered the documentary on DVD or Blu-ray at InfoWarsStore.com. Very important to have a copy of this in your archive to share with friends and family, to have your friends and family over for a showing or to show it to your church or to your PTA, because you have the power in this info war and as citizen journalists and activists to take important tools like this and pass it on to your friends and family. We are in an information war. There is a war on for your mind, and that's what this film is all about, and that's why I'm very honored to have InfoWars.com and our entire team to be basically joining forces with this great crew of researchers, filmmakers, writers, and the director to bring you State of Mind, the new film. So please get your copy today at InfoWarsStore.com, but we're about to premiere it. First off, I want to get a short comment from all of you here, most of the crew here, to talk about yourself, what led you to this point, and what they're about to see as we premiere this film to the viewers. Director James Lane, you introduce yourself first and say a few words to the viewers out there.
Thank you, Alex. Yes, my name is James Lane. I'm the director of A Noble Lie and State of Mind. When I started working with this crew, Chris Emery and the other guys that we worked on A Noble Lie with, you know, we asked people, why don't more folks question the official story? Why does this not, you know, more prominent in the public mind? And so we started looking at some of the methods of control that keep people, you know, sedated and not asking questions. And so we really wanted to expose the methodology, not just the who, but the how is it done. And that was our biggest motivation behind this. Having our roots in street activism, you know, we want to give people tools that they can go out and give to their friends and family that can help wake them up and you know, get them involved.
And I should add, you guys have also worked together on an amazing documentary, really the only modern comprehensive film in Oklahoma City, A Noble Lie. And we'll talk more about that with Chris in a moment. That film is also available at InfoWarsStore.com, and we've also played excerpts of it here on the Nightly News. But you're about to see the premiere of State of Mind here tonight. But your first film was excellent, and then the second one is even better. I can't wait to see the third film.
Well, we hope that it'll be more of many. The methodology is to present the information in a way that is palatable to the uninitiated. You know, something that you can show people that it's gentle in its approach, gentle enough that they can accept it and maybe start to do their own research.
And so you're not just preaching to the choir here. You're going over basic, what's on record, what we can confirm. Richard Grove, you helped write much of the film, and you are a forensic historian. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what people are about to see here.
I started out as a whistleblower and found out I had a lot to learn. And over 10 years, I started producing media. My latest series is called History, So It Doesn't Repeat. That's a video series on YouTube. I also host the Peace Revolution podcast. And really, these guys had asked me for an interview, and I was just honored to be part of the film. But after we had talked through the interview process, they asked me to come on board and help with some of the writing. And co-wrote the script with Kevin Cole and Matt Hart. So it's been a very enlightening process, because even though I thought I knew a lot about these topics, the process of doing the research, helps me to integrate it and summarize it more succinctly. That way it's more useful to pass around as knowledge. So the ideas expressed in a film aren't just for the choir. It's a bridge we're building to the congregation. It's a tool that you can use to not only enlighten yourself to these aspects and dig deeper, but to introduce it to a very deep topic to an audience that's not necessarily looking for that, in a way that's very polite and doesn't give them a lot of fear. It gives them more knowledge and information.
And even if you think you already know it all and are awake, watching something like this with all these doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and Army psych warfare commanders like Colonel Schaefer and everybody else really gets your mind back in the game to be aware of how much of this is going on. And it's not oppressive, it's empowering and enlightening to be aware of it. And you're like, what, we're letting these inbred scum run things? I mean, this is really a joke. What do you think the most powerful part, Richard, of the overall almost 2-hour film is?
I think the most powerful part is whatever point the individual watching the film starts to realize that they can empower themselves, they can reignite their curiosity, their inventiveness, start to realize that the problems around them, they don't have to be a victim to that, that they can learn through using methods to outgrow the status quo.
Powerful information. Oh, and I should add, we're going to show the whole film here, and we'll have a few intermissions. But at the end, we're also going to have some of the things that hit the cutting room floor. And you guys were saying some of this. I haven't seen some of this yet. I've seen the film, obviously. Some of this is even more powerful than what's in the film. It's just that it didn't fit in overall.
Right. I mean, we would have had a 10-hour movie if we hadn't made these cuts. And it was really difficult to make the cuts because it was such good information. You know, but in order to get the flow, to get the, you know, cohesion to the information, you know, we had to make those tough decisions.
And usually, you get the extras, you know, later, a year later on a second DVD. You're getting them at the premiere, here tonight. And so we'll see how much time we have for that, because you've got quite a bit, but it's powerful, because, I've seen just some short clips. Moving on here to one of the producers, Austin Green, because I love this diverse crew here, all the backgrounds you guys come from. Tell folks a little bit about yourself and what you think is most important about this documentary.
Well, my name's Austin Green. I'm a filmmaker with Free Mind Films. I came into this, towards the end of the process with A Noble Lie with Free Mind Films, coming as their editor. And through that process, we realized that we just had a lot in common. Our goals were the same. We want to get the same information out to people. And ultimately, we want humanity to be free and healthy and free of this tyranny once and for all, so we can grow as a species together. And so James and I just decided, you know, we got to join forces and do this thing for real. And, you know, going into state of mind through this whole process, it's just, you know, solidified what we already knew, that, you know, this is what our destiny is, and we want to just continue bringing the information to people and you know, get the information out there as best way we can, but at the same time do it in a way to where, you know, people aren't turned off by the information so much so that they're not even willing to give it a chance and show their family. And so, you know, we had to make a lot of tough calls about the information to cut from this film, because some of it may have been a little too much for the uninitiated, and it's always a tough call to make, but, you know, we did our best.
We've done a great job. As a veteran, because we've talked off air some before, you know, thinking you're fighting for America and then finding out most of it's globalist operations, does it feel good now to know that you 100% are fighting for humanity, period? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, we've talked privately before. What is the contrast between being a veteran now and, I mean, do you realize, from my perspective, that you're really fighting for humanity now?
Well, you know, when you're in the military, that's what they tell you, is that you're fighting for humanity, you're fighting for freedom, and you buy into it. You drink the Kool-Aid like everyone else, and you think that that's what you're doing, and then ultimately you realize there's a lot of hypocrisy going on, a lot of corruption going on. And that's why I got out after my first tour, was because I wanted to do something that I felt was more personally rewarding. And, you know, going to film school, you know, hoping that someday I would get a chance to do something like this. You
know, what an evil individual.
I know.
All right. My God. gosh. You wanted to, wow, that's horrible. And then pick people you wanted to work with, not be forced
right.
in with them. That's
absolutely.
Terrible.
And you know, I think that the result of that speaks for itself. What we've been able to accomplish with so little, it just goes to show everyone out there, you know, you're just like me. You're just like James and Richard and Chris here. You can go out and do these things too. We're not superhuman. We're just human beings that give
a damn.
A damn.
I think that's really the key to this, is that I'm just a regular guy. I started out at Access Television, and I've reached, let's not be conservative, probably a billion people one way or another.
Including myself. I mean, I got started through listening to your show, and that's how I ended up meeting these guys as well. I mean, that,
and now
that
you guys
together.
Reached millions with your last film. You will reach millions one way or another through this, and we're reaching people right now, and they're reaching. This is exciting.
Absolutely.
Incredible. Tell people about yourself.
Chris Emery, a filmmaker, been in the business for 31 years. This is the first time that I've had the chance to actually work with one of the best crews in the industry, and I say that hands down. I was more on the commercial side, worked in front of the camera for about 12 years, did print work, and then did biographical documentaries, mainly on philanthropists and so forth in Dallas, artists. But the Oklahoma City case was the first time that I had to actually do a full-fledged historical documentary. The State of Mind, Psychology of Control, I'm brought in more on the logistics and on the co-production end, not so much on the research end, and I'll be helping a lot with the marketing, more so on this end, on this project. So I'm really looking forward to it. We've really stepped up our game, and it was because of InfoWars. I mean, we really have to thank your entire crew. You guys have just rolled out the red carpet for us. And
well, it's an important film, and it gets people thinking, and it's our viewers that have rolled out the red carpet for liberty and for justice and for fighting the globalists, and that's how we've been able to do this. Well, enough of us talking for now. We'll pop back a few times during the premiere of State of Mind, and then again at the end, we're going to show you some of the extra information that couldn't fit in the film. So here it is, the premiere of State of Mind, the Psychology of Control, right now here on InfoWars Nightly News.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Bye.
if you don't submit to control, if you're a radical, you're less likely to be loved. You're not fitting in with society. You're viewed as an outsider. There's a lot of social prohibitions about the outsider and the person who's going to upset things.
From the time we're very young, we're taught to, you know, worship authority basically because that's our key to survival as young children. But as adults, we never go through the rites of passage that tell us how to methodically think for ourselves, and thus we're always in a state of extended adolescence.
Well, we take all this stuff, whether it's the television or it's the enculturation, the schoolyards, the teachers, we take this whole system, we put it into our unconscious mind. And it is the G-I-G-O that comes out, garbage in, garbage out. We simply, in that computer language, have harnessed our own power by accepting all these beliefs as though they are factual. Whether it's the flat earth of Columbus, or it's the idea that I'm not good enough to be or to do something I've dreamed to do.
To the degree that the individual loses the sense of what freedom really means for himself, mind control is working. This is the constant battle and the struggle. What does my freedom mean to me? What is it? How deep does it go? How far reaching is it?
Individuals come already with their rights. They're born with their rights. They're inherent. They're hardwired. They're hardware.
It's tragic. They've lost their sense of the importance of the individual. Each individual. We're not animals. We're individuals. We're created in the image of God.
And so what you have is everybody's born into this control structure. Everybody's born into authority. Everyone's born into this situation. But just because you have an authority making decisions for you at some point when you're very young, too young to take care of yourself, doesn't mean you should always cater to authority your whole life.
Fatalism, defeatism, what Bob Morley called mental slavery. That was a huge thing that he would sing about. How do we emancipate ourselves from mental slavery? Have we moved to that point of such slavery that we're too far gone?
And just kind of letting it all flow by and being apathetic about it just gets you in a position of being controlled.
You know, there are some people that don't care. There are some people that don't know and don't want to know. It is very frightening. If you really look at it, you would be left with the understanding that you were obligated to do something about it. And, you know, people work really hard every day, and they just want to relax and enjoy their life.
We have established a framework for the most part, works pretty good. People enter into this contract with society. That contract allows them to follow certain rules and expect certain returns on their investment of working within the framework of the contract.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
So why do people submit to control? I'm going to give you my answer before I hear the filmmakers. You're born into it. You grow up in your diapers in front of the television. They're not even aware of it. And as G.I. Joe says, it's really an old army saying, knowing is half the battle. James Lane, Mr. Green, I want to get your take as the filmmaker studying this. Why do people submit to being manipulated? For me, it makes me very angry that people are lying and trying to program me, trying to manipulate my free will.
I think one of the biggest aspects of it is the 15,000 hours of compulsory schooling. You know, we're taught not to question, we're taught to accept information on authority and regurgitate useless facts, not how to think, not how to be a person and think critically. That's got to be one of the most integral parts of it.
I mean, really, you know, from my perspective, especially coming from the military background, is that we control ourselves through societal pressures and peer pressures not to go outside of the box, not to be a critical thinker, but to just accept the status quo and go along to get along, not rock that boat. And so, you know, that's what you see in the military, especially, and the rest of the world, is that we're really all policing ourselves for the globalists. They don't have to do much. They've been trained us so much that we pretty much take care of the job.
They set up the parameters, and then we just stay within them. They've done these studies where they've got rats at universities within a steel maze that has little artificial lights and things. They think that's the whole universe. But if they could ever chew their way out, they would realize there's a whole planet around them. And I really think it goes back to Plato's allegory of the cave. Take the military. I find because there's discipline and things in it, people that come out of it and wake up are some of the best folks to work with. But at the same time, those that never wake up are some of the worst and become the enforcers because they are put through sleep deprivation. They are brainwashed. They are yelled at. They are conditioned. And if you look at cult programming, that's what it is. But I guess the Germans did develop in Prussia what is our modern military system, and they admitted it was a brainwashing system.
Absolutely, and that's what you see in our school systems, too. I mean, they've just taken that and rolled it right into there, and they treat our children like they're military people. They're training to go to war, and that's probably exactly what they're hoping for.
I think that you know, people want to be part of society. I mean, that's a natural thing that we do, but yet we're not given any other parameters. Like you were saying, they don't know anything that's outside of that maze. You know, we're not taught to think critically and have original thought.
They use our natural capacity. They use the fact that we naturally in a tribe want to conform and be friendly as humans and share. They artificially manipulate that.
Yeah, later on in the film you'll hear Eldon Taylor actually say, at some point you have to ask yourself, when was the last time you had an original thought? And I think that is what a lot of people, it keeps them in that level of control.
Now this next part of the film I think may be the most important. It deals with the fact that we're being turned into human resources. And you know, we weren't called human resources till the 30s. Human resources. Resources for who? You understand that, ladies and gentlemen? So get ready. Here is how the establishment see us.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Human beings form habits. At some point in our lives, many of us realize that the lives we are living are not those which we have imagined, but rather, lives reflecting others' imaginations, as if we have been unwitting actors in someone else's script. Are we acting out the artificial roles created by others who have successfully harnessed our minds through our habits? To answer that question, one must first learn how the minds of individuals can be harnessed by systems of psychological control. Are the habits reflected by human beings in direct conflict with their needs to survive and thrive in this world? The enormous implications deter many of us from asking these simple questions and finding answers relevant to our daily lives.
If we don't resist all of the different information that comes our way and weigh it and use our own mind instead of what somebody else wants us to think, eventually society would become nothing more than automatons, robots.
The establishment has it's protected itself. Unless you submit to the saturation indoctrination and adopt all its values, you can't get in.
Everyone needs to find out and really think about it. What is going too far? Because all of this is happening so fast, you need to be ahead of the game. They're ahead of the game.
Humans subjugate themselves to control because they're born into it. And the tyrants and the social engineers know how to incrementally begin to slowly ratchet up the manipulation, the domination, the oppression, so that people never really recognize it coming. It's the old analogy of the frog in the boiling pot. You throw a frog into a boiling pot, folks in Louisiana will tell you this, a bullfrog, he'll jump out. But if you put him in a cold pot, turn it on simmer, heat it up slow, he'll boil, and he'll never see it coming.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with group collectivism. And like, go back to John Dewey, you know, he hated the individual. He hated the rugged individualism of Americans. They had to get rid of that. And Carnegie very deeply involved in that. They even talk about getting rid of that, huh? And so I think that when you've been reduced to a member of the group, the collective, whether it's through sensitivity training that teachers have to go through, or whether, you know, it's in your own community, like we have a community-oriented policing system, you know, where they give you a medal. If you do a good deed, well, you know, you're part of the collective with the police.
I would say in the next 50 years, if large numbers of people don't become consciously resistant to the overall mind control exerted on society, we're going to see many more people who really truly resemble androids. People induce this themselves by looking out at the world and saying, it's too dangerous for me to tell the truth or to say what I really believe or express how I really feel. It's much better if I fabricate a completely synthetic personality that's going to sit back here and remain passive. That's how it works.
The idea of short-term gain, basically giving up freedoms. Giving up freedoms is never a good idea.
Since the dawn of time, small groups of human beings have instilled artificial circular limitations on the minds of their subjects through the procession of history. Traditionally, the limitations are imprinted on the servile population through a cunning use of language, instruction, and media for the purposes of conquest, social cohesion, and authoritative order by harnessing the human resources of the broad population. Human history reflects countless stories, regardless of what era you happen to live in, and the common thread throughout these stories is that of the struggle between the state, whatever its form, and the individual, the goal of which is to harness and subsume the individual, willingly or unwillingly, into its group collective.
The role of authority is a predatory system that sees the individual basically as a unit of energy. The first forms of mind control go back to prehistory. And you would simply have a priest class that developed technologies of herbs and medicine and had a value to the tribe. But pretty soon the priest class would start studying the sky and when there were solar and lunar eclipses and would say, hey, the sun's not going to come back on this date unless you make me king or unless you give me total control. And the people would say, okay, we saw the eclipse when you said it was coming. You know, the snake god ate the sun of the moon. What do you want? I want your firstborn child. Sacrifice him to me. Every culture does that. Every culture at one time or another demands human sacrifice because that's the state or the priest class demanding absolute, total fealty and submission to it.
Mind control has existed since the dawn of time. Only the methods have changed. Elites have always known, if I can control the minds of my people, I control them. Only the technology has changed. It's still the same program. It's never stopped.
Sun Tzu, within the works of The Art of War, talk about the fact that if you can understand your enemy so well to the level of where you can psych him out, basically defeat him before you put one boot on the battlefield, you've become a true master of your domain.
The Greek author Plato embedded several key characteristics of ruling groups in his monumental work known as The Republic. Therein, he introduces the term cybernetics as a description of steering the ship of state, emphasizing crowd control. Plato memorialized the essence of the scenario used to control individuals to this day, to make them part of the group or state. This is famously known as the allegory of the cave, a useful strategy which is emblematic of the history of mind control.
The idea of cybernetics first shows up in Plato's Republic, I believe it's book 6, and in the Greek original text it's read cybernetes, but you can easily discern how this word tied into cybernetics, the control of not only nations, but how the making of individuals into the collective that forms nations came about.
As we've moved through history, every great leader has had to understand the potential of information, the potential of speech, the potential of words, the potential of books.
What is a citizen, if not someone willingly or unwillingly participating in the machinations of the state? How would we acquire the habits of citizenship without stimulus from the state and our response to it?
Attention! Attention! This is your beloved leader, Og the Exalted. There will be a special Science Joy rally today at Og Memorial Stadium.
Thank you.
fling.
In an attempt to assist the state, a 14th century Italian named Niccolo Machiavelli crafted several books intended to help the ruling elite dominate their subjects with the most effective psychological warfare techniques available to the world at that time.
And he was trying to convert the Medici family into hiring him to provide political advice. Conspiracy is the story of history. It's the story of plunderers taking care of people who produce. They claim to take care of them through government, which doesn't give you anything. It doesn't take away first. So it's not creating something out of nothing. It's very real what they're doing. They're taking your rights or taking some people's rights and adding more to someone else's rights.
Concurrent to Machiavelli's efforts, the consequences of tyranny were sowing the seeds of liberty throughout Europe, with authors like Étienne de la Boétie of France leading individuals to consider their situations and discover effective means to achieving liberty for all.
So this whole idea of Machiavelli telling the ruling elite how to do this in a more efficient and, effective manner without people directly knowing about it. But his mistake is that these books get out there and other people start to read these books because it's not just the ruling elite. This starts to have an influence in Europe. You've got a character named Étienne de la Boétie who writes a discourse on voluntary servitude. And basically what de la Boétie does is he shows you that everything that Machiavelli told the ruling elite about how to control you is undone when you understand it to the nuts and bolts level where you can then withdraw your consent and that only then are you free.
We control you. We control your mind. We make you believe you have no creative power. We make you forget you have imagination, which is the core capability from which you can invent your own reality.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
And we're back with the crew of Free Minds Film. Again, I'm your host here on InfoWars Nightly News, and we're premiering here the film State of Mind. We're going to go right back to the film here in just a moment, but first off, talking to Richard Grove and Chris Emery from the film, I want to get more into how amazing this is that we allow our resources to be collectivized. In France, it's over 80%, and the government gives part of it back with strings attached and actually says, we're giving you this, when all they did was steal it. It's just all of it is so fraud-based.
Well, it's a reflection of the scientific management of society, which started in the early 1900s. I think Frederick Winslow Taylor is the person that's credited with that. But it's all about using the scientific data to dissolve the family boundaries, the boundaries of the individual, to break down the individual so that they don't think of themselves as an individual. They think of themselves as part of a group. The term group, it's a universal. It's something that's in the mind. There are no groups in physical reality. So breaking the context and the relationship between the mind and physical reality makes people confused and easily malleable. And
your only identity is that what color you are or where you're from instead of who am I?
It's a class system.
It's
predefined.
Slavery.
It's predefined, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other idea that breaking down the family will benefit the scientific dictatorship is the power of the individual has to be harnessed. The power that you have, your attention, your focus has to be misdirected toward things that you don't really need in your life to survive. And once they can do that, that is benefiting some third party that you haven't even investigated yet. So really, what they're doing as far as trying to break down the individual is it's a info war that goes on in your mind. But once you know about it, then you can start to outgrow that and grow in the light direction toward the truth, toward reality, toward knowing thyself, which is really the mission of every individual human soul on this planet.
And Chris, I want to get your take on this, but it's so fundamental. They say obsess over what supposed race you are, we're all humans, or obsess over religion, or obsess over this or that, or obsess over a sexual preference, as if it's some civil right issue to get us all obsessing over sex, while foreign banks steal $85 billion a month from us, while they're putting cancer viruses in the vaccines, hydrofluorosilicic acid in the water that Harvard admits is giving us cancer and dumbing us down. So we're not thinking about the real attacks we're all under by the social engineers. They give us all these balkanized fake reasons to fight with each other.
And that all comes down to eugenics. And what is the end goal? What is the end game of these people that are perceive that they're in power? And it's getting the population down to something that they want, whether it be a million or 500,000 or some.
They call it manageable.
Exactly. One thing that I was thinking about when Richard said that, you know, this all came into play in the early 1900s, a lot of folks don't realize that the Women's Voting Act came into be not because they wanted to give women the ability to vote, is that they wanted them to get out there and get into the workforce so they could collect taxes. It was a whole other segment of society.
And have the state raise the children.
So that in and of itself was a financial human resource. People have to understand that we are being taken advantage of on so many levels, whether it be the financial or eugenics. This movie breaks that down into simple terms where you can understand, okay, well, at least this is what I could study on to expand on what's going on. And it makes it a lot easier to understand.
Absolutely. We're going to go to the next segment of the film right now, and we'll be right back.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
The myriad components of collectivism combine to form a comprehensive system for transforming the individual into a cog within the machinery of the state. The first step is to remove self-reliance, thus creating dependence on the state or collective. The next step is to create a motivation based on fear of scarcity, as opposed to creativity and productivity. Remove the systems of autonomy, creativity, and self-teaching, which help create individuality in the first place, and the void is filled by the will of the collective. Nature abhors a vacuum, and the mind is no different. Innovative and enigmatic German philosopher of the 19th century, Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, observed that human history could be manipulated to create a contrived outcome. Hegel's essential observations of the methods by which history may be authored by a small group translate into a world in which an individual's choices may be engineered away from his needs.
How to engineer the opinion of the American people so that they would fully endorse, not only endorse, but demand a war.
Right now. Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion.
So it's problem. The people then beg for it. That's reaction. And then it's solution, which is centralizing more control.
Create the problem. People scream. You can impose any solution you want on people.
One recent practical example of the use of Hegel's method for control is that of the infamous underwear bomber.
I'm Kurt Haskell. I'm a Michigan attorney, and I'm more well known as being the main eyewitness to the underwear bomber event on Christmas Day 2009. I saw two men approach the desk. One looked like a poor African man, or maybe late teenager. And one looked like a wealthier Indian-looking man who had on a tan suit. They were walking together, and I just thought they were a weird pair. And I was wondering why the two were together. And I listened to their conversation as they went up to the desk and talked to the airline worker. When they went up there, just the Indian man spoke, and he said, this man needs to get on the flight, but he doesn't have a passport. And then the airline worker said, well, he can't get on the flight without a passport. And then the Indian man kind of argued with her, saying, well, he's from Sudan, and we do this all the time.
The student from Nigeria smuggled explosives onto a flight in his underwear. Prosecutors staged a demonstration of what might have happened. But something went wrong. Abdul Muttalab's trousers burst into flames. Passengers and crew grabbed him. The plane landed safely.
A source has confirmed that Farouk Muttalab is the son of Alhaji Muttalab, former chairman of one of Nigeria's biggest, wealthiest, and most respected banks, First Bank of Nigeria.
As soon as this happens, we see Mr. Chertoff all over the news and TV everywhere promoting these body scanning machines.
But there are a few things we could do to make things better. First, we could deploy the scanning machines that we currently are beginning to deploy in the U.S. that would give us the ability to see what someone has concealed underneath their clothing.
To meet agendas in conflict with the needs of individuals, the ruling class creates an artificial crisis to which the public reacts by begging for the ruling class to intervene. The ruling class then enjoys the plunder made possible by removing the self-reliance from individuals.
Good morning, everybody. Today's hearing is the third in a series of subcommittee hearings focused
and some of the causes and consequences of the 2008 financial crisis, a man-made economic assault on our country that is still foreclosing on homes, shuttering businesses, and driving unemployment.
The combined philosophies of Thomas Malthus, Charles Darwin, and Herbert Spencer led to the development of social Darwinism. Social Darwinism grafted the concept of the survival of the fittest onto the larger social framework. Claims of biological advantages or superiority could then be advanced as justification for future economic policy relating to the poor, and as the basis of Francis Galton's pseudoscience of eugenics in the 20th century.
So Darwin comes along about 150 years ago and comes out with his theories on where life comes from, and then it's survival of the fittest, and that the best organisms are able to survive in a competitive environment and move forward in the evolutionary chain. And whether that theory is correct or partially correct or totally wrong is a side issue. The robber barons, the British royalty, the J.P. Morgans of the world publicly adopted the idea of Darwinism and merged it with predatory eugenics.
And the eugenicists, who have always been looking for scientific causes to justify their sinning, if you will, that's what they found so useful in Darwin's work, is they said, we've already had this belief system that we're better than you, but we now have science to back it up.
Our entire current civilization, what we know as globalism, the New World Order, is based on eugenics scientists that developed their theories in the last 200 years, mainly in England, Germany, and the United States. The entire science of genetics, biometrics, eugenics, computers, all of it came out of the search for a system of total control over humanity.
So the issue with eugenics is it claims to be a science of self-adaptation for human species. So it sounds like a great thing if you're an individual. You want to make yourself better. If you reproduce, you want your kids to be strong and survive. However, the people who are doing it are taking and making a bunch of decisions for other people and violating volition and their free will all over the place, because that's their modus operandi.
In his 1928 book, The Open Conspiracy, former British psychological warfare expert H.G. Wells wrote, "The political world of the open conspiracy must weaken, efface, incorporate, and supersede existing governments. The character of the open conspiracy will then be plainly displayed. It will be a world religion. This large, loose, assimilatory mass of groups and societies will definitely and obviously attempt to swallow up the entire population of the world and become a new human community. The immediate task before all people, a planned world state, is appearing as a thousand points of light, but generations of propaganda and education may have to precede it."
The government of England put massive funding towards the study of humans, and not just medicine, but human behavior. And so all the sciences that the British Empire used on countries that it was attacking and regions it was conquering were also turned inward against their own populations.
In 1948, Eric Blair, the British journalist and author who assumed the nom de plume of George Orwell, wrote the iconic dystopian novel, 1984. In it, Orwell outlined a collectivist future governed by technocrats, in which a big brother totalitarian state maintains control of society through constant panopticon-inspired surveillance, fueled by a perpetual war and emboldened by both covert and overt forms of mind control and mass persuasion.
The premise of the panopticon, it was a architectural design that was set up to maximize the power of surveillance. So if the prisoners didn't know, they could never tell if they were actually being watched at any one time, so they would have to assume that they were always being watched.
Through 1984, Orwell introduced the concept of newspeak into popular culture, a debased language structure that would suppress the ability of the masses to upset the power of the state by regulating their thoughts through an illusory police force known as the Thought Police. Orwell's notion of doublespeak demonstrated the cognitive dissonance inherent in tyrannical structures. As the meanings of the words change, the meaning in society is lost.
And fortunately, we have been able to raise our standard of living without sacrificing the spiritual side of life, which means so much to the American family.
Thomas Henry Huxley, the man known as Darwin's Bulldog, produced a number of grandchildren, the two best known and most influential being Julian and Aldous Huxley. Sir Julian Huxley, an evolutionary biologist, was elected as the first Director General of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and also served as both Vice President and President of the British Eugenics Society.
So the Huxley family is highly interesting because T.H. Huxley is the teacher over H.G. Wells who becomes a famous protege. But Huxley's whole family is not only intermarried and working on these eugenics ideas themselves, but they have, he has a famous son and grandson and all sorts of famous cousins that tie into the Darwin-Wedgwood family. So notably, you have Aldous Huxley, who coins the phrase Brave New World in 1932 with his novel, which is really describing a technocratic future by which people are pharmaceutically drugged into loving their servitude.
I think what is going to happen in the future is the dictators will find, as the old saying goes, that you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. That if you want to preserve your power indefinitely, you have to get the consent of the ruled. And this they will do partly by drugs, as I foresaw in Brave New World, partly by these new techniques of propaganda. They will do it by bypassing the sort of rational side of man and appealing to his subconscious and his deeper emotions and his physiology even, and so making him actually love his slavery. I mean, I think this is the danger, that actually people may be in some ways happy under the new regime, but they will be happy in a situation where they oughtn't to be happy.
Leveraging the fact that the 20th century opened up numerous avenues for shaping and controlling the thoughts and behaviors of the population, the ruling elite contrived new ways of obscuring useful facts while peddling useless ideas to the American people. Advertising, in addition to fundamental changes in education, produced a population of non-thinkers whose false understanding of basic concepts instilled through public schooling led to generations of people who feel they are magically endowed with the ability to somehow attain knowledge without first observing the landscape of available, credible evidence. One such artifact of credible evidence which demonstrates that our lives are being scripted by the ruling class is a 1966 textbook authored by Georgetown professor Dr. Carol Quigley, titled Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. In it, Quigley details a secret society partially funded by central banker Lord Rothschild, enacted by Cecil Rhodes and led by Lord Alfred Milner in the Round Table Journal of International Affairs, which Quigley terms the Milner Group. The first questions most people ask upon hearing of such a book are, why is it so important, and why do so few know about its existence?
This is a key book. It's almost like the Rosetta Stone to decode everything they're doing. It's over 1,000 pages long with incredible, documentation in the bibliography of how this ruling elite based out of Britain is using a full-spectrum dominance model to fund the communists, to fund the fascists, to fund the Democrats, to fund the Republicans, so that there looks like there's a choice, but everything really is moving towards collectivism for the general public, while the elite themselves are exempt from all their own rules.
These are the ideas of people who plunder that care not about laws or boundaries or nations or your rights. They see might makes right. And so when Cecil Rhodes goes in and creates Rhodesia, you have South Africa and the De Beers whole cartel of diamonds and gold. And then you look at who Cecil Rhodes left his will to, who funded him to go down there and do that. You keep coming back to the historical central bankers that have been manipulating world events as we've been taught them for at least you know, since the beginning of our country, 1776, 1790 is when they start to gain a foothold. They then come over in the 1820s, 1830s, 1840s, pre-Civil War, gain a stronger foothold. And by the end of the Civil War, we're completely switched over to a system we had fought 60 years before to overthrow.
Once the power structure got all the best and brightest students of the world and put them through Rhodes Scholar-type programs, not just in England but in other nations, they could then control the brain trust and have a fully programmed new generation to take control of the governmental, corporate, and media systems to carry out the program.
Their goal was to dominate all of those major power centers quietly behind the scenes. And by moving the leadership in a certain direction, then they knew that they can control the masses without the masses even knowing that they're being dominated and led by a very small, powerful elite group.
In further pursuit of the science of controlling human resources, the last will and testament of Cecil Rhodes spawned the Pilgrim Society in both America and England, which created a global brain trust. Its goal? To assert global control by dividing its tasks into working groups, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg Group, and Trilateral Commission throughout the 20th century. In more recent history, the long-held beliefs of the ruling class regarding control of the individual's body by the undermining of his mental abilities were then furthered by the technological breakthroughs of the 19th and 20th centuries. In the 19th century, the Prussian government conducted research into the study of how to make individuals compliant cogs in the machine of their conflict-based empire. Prussian psychologist Wilhelm Wundt determined that the individual human being has no soul and can thus be programmed like an automaton or robot.
You see, the social engineers don't need us under social Darwinism. We're scum to be removed. We are seen as nothing but biological androids or replicants from the Philip K. Dick book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep Turned into Blade Runner? We're just seen as dumbed down biological workers.
When individual identity has been forsaken, it is much easier to compartmentalize the minds of those being controlled. Various personages throughout history have described the human being as a machine, but it was the synergy amongst the work of Wilhelm Wundt, Ivan Pavlov, and many others, which scientifically quantified the individual as soulless, thus justifying manipulation to plunder individuals of their rights, transforming individuals into human resources.
Our system is copied from a 1819 Prussian system that's a three-tiered education system. One tier is for the intellectual elite. The second tier is for the servers of the intellectual elite. They would be the professionals, the doctors, the lawyers. And the last tier is for the lay. It's for the masses.
Education, as we know it, is nothing more than mind control. It is the science of control. And the British scientists, the eugenicists, came up with systems to dumb people down and make them submissive. But the German model, in fact, namely the Prussian model, that was designed to create soldiers that were owned by the state, but that were so brainwashed they were proud to go off and march into musket fire. That system, known as kindergarten, is the whole basis of modern Western education.
How do you measure the achievement of a nation?
If you want to know how we're really doing, take a look at our schools. For on what we're doing here and in schools throughout the world rests not only our future fate, but perhaps the very fate of civilization itself.
Building upon this dehumanization of individuals to the animal state of stimulus response, Russian researcher Ivan Pavlov and American researcher John B. Watson conducted experiments based on classical conditioning, a simple manipulation of reflexes under observable conditions. These methods were then improved and perfected by Harvard psychologist B.F. Skinner.
B.F. Skinner was also one of these famous American behaviorists, and he championed something called operant conditioning. Again, just a fancy jargon term for some basic common sense. And operant conditioning was really all about negative reinforcements like timeouts, positive reinforcements like food pellets and money, and punishments, which are like punishment shocks. This operant conditioning doesn't work so good on anti-authoritarians, people who challenge and resist authority. And later on, research has shown that operant conditioning works best on people who are dependent, infantilized, in other words, made like children.
When you ask yourself, as a teacher, as I have at the college level, what have I got that my students want? Sometimes a pretty discouraging question. But you can discover things which will be reinforcing to students at any level. And that has been done. A great deal of progress has been made. There are things in an ordinary, even, say, a ghetto classroom, the lower grades or high school, that can be used as reinforcers. You can have special foods at lunchtime, access to play space, privileges to associate with other kids of your choice. More and more of these things have been brought into play as the kinds of contrived reinforcers that can be used temporarily to get the kinds of behavior which will then eventually have their own natural consequences, which will be reinforcing.
One of the notable things that separates human beings from other inhabitants of this planet that we call animals is our ability to form questions. And that allows us to remove ourselves from certain types of control. Now, animals are subject to many of the same sort of stimuli that can train and condition them to give you, you know, you can make a pigeon, according to Skinner, that appears to know how to read and respond to lexicons. So it gives the appearance that the pigeon can read or that the fleas are trained, but really all you're doing is, you know, reinforcing a random schedule of conditioning, taking natural characteristics and harnessing them. So what you see in the 20th century, not only with the eugenics crowd and all these other things that we've talked about, what you see is they go after the root cause of humanity. The root cause of humanity is that we've learned to, you know, speak amongst ourselves, and we've learned to observe reality, remove contradictions, and get to that which exists. When somebody obscures that feedback loop between you observing and testing it out and verifying it, when someone obscures that, they can take total control of your awareness.
These methods of classical conditioning had advocates in other fields equally or more influential. Soon, the field of compulsory education would teem with the ideas first spelled by these social engineers.
These children are being taught to accept uncritically whatever they're told. Questions are not encouraged.
How can you ask such a question? Have you got a textbook?
Yes, ma'am.
Does it say here that our law courts are always just?
Yes, ma'am.
Then how dare you question the fact? Sit down.
And so we aren't surprised when...
But it must be true. I saw it in this book right here.
The education our children are going to get has nothing to do with education. It is training our children to be resources, human resources, that's the way they refer to us, to spin off profits for the globalists.
The greatest barrier to discovery is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge, and that's what the 15,000 hours in compulsory schooling really entrains and conditions into us, is that you've been told this story of the people in South America, and so you think you know about it. And it's not until later in life when you might come across more information about conquistadors and how Jesuits infiltrated all their religious systems and took all the riches out and basically harvested this whole area. And this is an example of plunder in South America that went on for hundreds of years. So until you have this other piece of information to bring this into focus, you think that what you're taught in public schooling during that 15,000 hours is really what's going on. And it's not until you bump up against reality, as George Orwell said, usually on a battlefield, that you have to consider that which you were taught to believe versus the objective evidence that exists.
J.
John Taylor Gatto was an award-winning educator in New York who took kids that couldn't even read or write, were headed for prison, and made them top-level students. And then he discovered that he was shut down by the big tax-free foundations so that he couldn't teach the children this information. And he discovered that it was by design that they were dumbing people down to make them subservient biological androids or replicants. That's what we're seen as. But now we're obsolete. We're to be phased down. The new robotic systems, the drone aircraft, the drone submarines, the drone ships, the drone robots on the ground, we're all being conditioned, all being acclimated for this.
In The Underground History of American Education, John Taylor Gatto details how, beginning in the early 19th century, American travelers abroad were writing on the methodology of Prussian schools and composing travelers' reports, which were very influential on educational techniques in the United States. However, in 1831, it was French philosopher and minister of education, Victor Cousin, who published his Report on the State of Public Instruction in Prussia, which not only led to the consolidation of French schools under the Prussian model, but also directly influenced reformers like Horace Mann in the United States to follow suit. Mann traveled to Prussia and, without even seeing one classroom in session, sought to adopt the Prussian model of education with his annual reports given to the Massachusetts State Board of Education. Mann's promotion of the concept that the state is the father of children was reinforced and expanded by educational reformers throughout the 19th and 20th century.
When we speak about enculturated processes, when we talk about the imprinting, of course, you know, I mentioned educators. One of the things that surprises a lot of people, and it shouldn't because it's publicly known, is that our education system is not about educating as much as it is about socializing. Like the duckling in the chicken yard. If you take that duckling and raise it with the chickens, it's going to be imprinted, it's going to behave like the chickens. And in that very real sense, we perpetuate this. The danger is we don't just perpetuate it, we don't just enculturate it, but it's the only sane way we see to raise our children. And the result is there's no escaping it.
C.S. Lewis said, when training, which is Skinner, Pavlov, beats education, civilization dies.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Again, you're watching InfoWars Nightly News and the premiere of State of Mind. I want to remind all the viewers that it is essential that we support independent pro-liberty film, a Veritas-type film. You can buy State of Mind on DVD or on Blu-ray at InfoWarsStore.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139. Again, that's 888-253-3139. Or again, simply becoming a subscriber to PrisonPlanet.tv. We'll also have it archived here on the site. But it is so important that you vote with your dollars. The globalists take your money and give it a stimulus to MSNBC to put out anti-family, anti-self-defense, pro-tyranny messages. Same thing goes on with National Public Radio. We're not funded by that. We're funded by patriots who love freedom worldwide like you. So I want to thank everyone that is a PrisonPlanet.tv subscriber. We have Operation Awaken the Sleeping Giant, one membership, $5.95 a month. 11 people can log on with the same username and passcode. And I want to encourage you all to go to InfoWarsStore.com and get your copy on DVD or Blu-ray so you also have that in your library, in your archive. And again, most filmmakers I have on, most filmmakers who I sell their film, do not authorize us to, A, premiere it here on the show in the nightly news, but, B, put it on YouTube. but they have authorized us to put this whole discussion in the film tonight on YouTube because they want to reach people. That's the currency they're looking for, is to free minds, to empower people. That's civilization. Slave-based systems want to keep people in the dark. And going back to Richard Grove, the writer, and Austin Green, one of the producers on this, I just don't get, we talked about this on the radio last time you were on, using knowledge to suppress people when my great thrill is empowering them. It is the ultimate in selfishness. Then I want to talk about what are the methods of conditioning and dumbing down in the classroom.
Well, what you're talking about is, as far as dumbing down is taking thinking out of in between stimulus and response, which makes us automatons. It makes us slaves in every way, shape, and form.
Slaves to stimulus.
Absolutely. And in between stimulus and response, it's that space that gives you choice and freedom and liberty and all the things that we need. But because we as conscious human beings have to use reason to survive. We have to effectively plan for the future, and we have to know what knowledge looks like in order to dismiss the arbitrary and find the
lie. But I mean, dumb that down for me. Okay, because... And for folks that may not know these terms, stimulus is you ring the bell, the dog salivates because you've given him the meat over and over again. And their big lie, we don't have free will. Wait, they want to take over. They have free will. It's a mind game that you're just our slaves.
It's a ploy. They condition human beings through operant conditioning much the same as they can train pigeons to look like they're reading and pecking at words because it's a reward. But that's only a human being when they're not thinking. If you question the psychological warfare, if you question the neurolinguistic programming, if you question the corporate media that you see on TV and all over the newspapers and all around you in your life, in your family's life, then you can free yourself from the system. So the damage done in the 15,000 hours in the classroom through Prussian education and the servile mentality.
Look at the camera right there and tell them what Prussian education is.
Prussian education, Prussia, before it was Germany in the late 1860s, it was called Prussia, and it was a bunch of different city-states that were all kind of at war. And finally, they got together through militarizing and using force, fraud, and aggression to attain their goals. And this was working really well until Napoleon, Napoleon had defeated the Prussian army at the Battle of Jena in 1806. And from that, the Prussian government and people like Karl von Clausewitz, who wrote on war, they went out and decided, hey, we can't have people on the battlefield who will run away from weapons and won't fight for their country. We need to nationalize their mentality. We need to break the individuality and the sovereignty of those individuals. We need to make them submit. Through force, fraud, and coercion, compulsory schooling was the model that they made successful, and it later resulted in the Nazis.
That's right. Our modern educational system is a German military brainwashing program on record. Kindergarten, all of it. People go, well, I just grew up in this. Well, let me tell you, it's the opposite of freedom. And nothing against Germans, I'm part German. The point is, it was a technology corrupt people used to take over the Germans. It's like the global model is a British Empire model. I'm part English. I'm not against the British people. They always spin that, too. Like, if you're like, I don't like what the communist Chinese are doing. What, you don't like Chinese people? You know, I don't like what Hitler did. What, you don't like Germans? Again, that's operant conditioning. Don't be racist. Just to get you people out there watching off of the real info. Don't like government-run healthcare? You're a racist. Don't want to turn your guns in? You're a racist. That's that conditioning, that buzzword again.
You're observing this phenomenon that goes on, and it's prevalent, so we should give it a name. This idea that you got your finger on it, it's the philosophic corruption of our reality. It's the fact that people don't value truth anymore. They say they do, but they won't go through the work to actually realize it and do the learning, which results from asking questions.
Austin?
I think that the conditioning was summed up in the film best by B.F. Skinner. You know, he talks about there's certain things that you can do to manipulate your students to get a particular behavior response out of them. And then once you do that enough, once you repeat that over and over again, eventually those behaviors become self-reinforcing. Like we were saying earlier, we all police ourselves. And so really, they don't have to continually do this. All they have to do is, you know, get you up until about fourth grade. They've got you so trained at that point that once you enter into high school, you're doing it on your own. And so really, we just see that repetition of taking away your individuality. Anytime somebody in school tries to speak an original thought or question what the teacher has to say, they're immediately punished. They're immediately chastised, and this happens over and over and over again.
And it's this worship of authority where they've done, as you know, two different, covered in the film, university experiments, where people would kill people under orders because an authority figure told them. I mean, if an authority figure told me to mow their lawn, I'd tell them no. They tell university students, kill that person, and they'll do it. I mean, this is incredible.
Well, there's two aspects. There's an MK Ultra aspect where you could train someone to actually kill and eat their parents. And then there's the everyday advertising Psy War that we're all exposed to through any magazine or newspaper or television ad that we see on TV. So all these things come, you know, it's like a coincidentia oppositorum. You have scientific management coming through MK Ultra from top down in intelligence agencies, and you have Psy War coming in from the marketing companies, and they make a very happy living off of the unwitting servitude.
There's layers and layers of the programming. It's just incredible, meant to just overwhelm you till you just give up.
And this is a great tool to peel off those layers one layer at a time as you learn how to.
And the fun is, once you know the programming, you learn the cop doesn't know what they're doing, they're programmed too. The bureaucrat doesn't know, and they like short circuit when you know the programming and they don't. But instead of using that programming to enslave them, you use it to unlock their mind.
The fundamental choice that human beings have is to think or not to think. So we all have the ability to think. If you choose not to ask the questions, if you choose to be servile and you want to give away other people's rights that you don't have the right to do, that's fine. You can do that. But expect other people to resist, the people who are aware of how things work and how logic and reason should be, you know, advanced in this world.
That's right. Just because you've been put through dog training at the TSA to be a slave, prisoner training, doesn't mean I'm going to go along with it. And I notice with these sheep, sometimes they get mad when I wake people up about what's happening, and then later they go, no, I agree with you. It's like once they see me not bow to their peer pressure, they have like mass Stockholm syndrome. Then they grovel to me, and I go, no, I don't want you to be my prisoner. I don't want my kids growing up in a world with a bunch of slaves. Stop acting like that. It's pathetic. Let's go back to more of State of Mind, premiering the whole film here tonight with extras coming up.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Although education has proven to be highly effective in controlling human behavior, more intensive research would need to be conducted away from the prying eyes of the public.
The Tavistock Institute was set up by the British Empire to really study mind control and to scientifically drill down into human behavior and put in textbook form systems of basic control so that could be duplicated out to government and corporate entities. And Tavistock has been involved at every level of social engineering.
The Tavistock Clinic was founded in 1920 and operated as part of the Psychological Warfare Division of the British military. It was initially a voluntary outpatient clinic for treatment and research and was made up of general physicians, neurologists, and psychiatrists to facilitate the treatment of neurosis and shell-shocked British soldiers returning home from World War I.
Going through their own publications on Amazon, you can find that some of their books cost like $18,000, $20,000. And that what that tells me is they don't want the average person to be anywhere near getting their hands on this book, because what it gives you inside those books is the teacher's edition, to use an abstraction, as opposed to the students sitting around the class not knowing what the answers to the questions are. There's a group of people who are being given the answers to all the questions about how we act, react, and how we've been understimulated with curiosity in order to make us more subordinative.
You could say much of our world today is the world of the Tavistock Institute and Edward Bernays.
Having been instrumental in the Tavistock Clinic and director of the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, it was former officer and consulting psychiatrist to the British Army, John Rawlings Rees, who created the concept of the Psychological Shock Troops, or Culture Warriors, a federation of psychiatrists, which he intended to disperse across the globe to make it, quote, possible for people of every social group to have treatment when they need it, even when they do not wish it, without it being necessary to invoke law. The Tavistock Institute's influence did not stop simply at social psychology. Kurt Lewin, former head of Britain's Psychological Warfare Bureau, was a German refugee who became the founder of modern social psychology in the 20th century, an early consultant to the OSS, and an influential researcher with the Tavistock Institute in the area of management thinking and action research, specifically focused on the tactics of managing change within society. No organization of the size and scope of Tavistock can operate for long without ample funding. From whom is that funding derived? Certainly no small part comes from the seemingly benign, tax-exempt foundations of the global elite.
I was researching the Rees Committee back in like 1952, 1953, where they went in and investigated major foundations and some of their subversive activities. These foundations put an enormous amount of energy into controlling what is being taught at the schools and how it's being taught and preparing, using schools basically to indoctrinate children to accept their station in life, to accept a collectivist future.
According to Dr. Lily Kay, whose expertise was demonstrated in her 1993 book, The Molecular Vision of Life, The Rockefeller Foundation, Caltech, and the New Molecular Biology, the world in which we are living has been molded, shaped, and continues to be directed by an elite establishment of eugenicists, a ruling class fueled by violating the will of others to attain their goals.
Nowadays, almost every adult agrees on one basic goal for all students.
Schools ought to turn out good citizens.
Yes, good citizens.
That's right.
Absolutely. This country always needs good citizens.
The real goal was to change America from an individualist system into a collectivist system, and in which case it could be merged with the rest of the world, and there would be this great new world order that we hear so much about in recent years.
The purpose of creating tax-exempt foundations was not just to collect more money, but to invisibly assert influence over the power centers which control the programming of individuals, specifically to breed the self-reliance out of individuals and prepare them for the collectivist lifestyle planned by the ruling class. Their goal: to undermine personal liberty on biological, social, and economic levels.
They came together and decided what they were going to do with this money was to gain control of education in America, not for a philanthropic purpose, but to change the thinking of the American people over a generation or two.
The globalist social engineers hungered and desired and coveted the power that the liberty in the U.S. had created. They wanted to take it over, and the tax-free foundations wanted to use it as an engine of global domination, and they've done that. And the Rees Committees were the only time when Congress stood up constitutionally and demanded all the big foundations come and testify and open their private books. And the Rockefeller, the Carnegie, the Ford Foundation, they all came and said, look, we're here under presidential directive from more than 50 years ago. We've been told to collectivize the United States, to merge it with the Soviet Union. We've been told to make America more compatible with authoritarian regimes, and we're just doing what we were chartered to do.
Until the creation of language, brute force held the key to fear, and thus to the control of individuals through violence and physical aggression. With the innovation of language, the minds of individuals could be harnessed with ideas and beliefs, making less significant the physical dominance of previous generations. This is how, for example, men of small stature could keep otherwise brave and ferocious gladiators as household slaves, whose deaths could be used for profit and entertainment. Out of the ashes of World War II, rose the specter of human experimentation in the form of the 1939 to 1945 exodus of Nazi intelligentsia to continue their research and experimentation under the protection of national security. After being denazified, they were given new identities to live among those against whom they had fought.
We brought Wernher von Braun over here and several other scientists, including those that were involved in concentration camp medical experiments, including mind control experiments.
A lot of these guys were, as far as the State Department was concerned, war criminals. They were linked directly to the Nazis and therefore couldn't get visas, couldn't come into the United States. So the CIA set up this series of programs to route everybody around the State Department visa requirements, get them into the country.
Everybody knows about the race at the end of World War II to get Nazi scientists. The Russians wanted them. The United States and England wanted them. And the United States and England got most of them because the Nazis didn't want to go to the Soviet Union, another authoritarian system. They wanted to go to a, quote, freer system. And like an infection, they came to England, Canada, and the United States. And it wasn't just over NASA and rocketry with Wernher von Braun and Goddard and others. It was tens of thousands in mind control and torture and military science and surveillance. And the CIA got modeled to a great extent off of the Gestapo. And so we see really the evil of the Nazis being transplanted back to the United States and England, where the eugenics philosophy that they had embraced had originally sprung.
The Office of Strategic Services, the precursor of the CIA, under the direction of William Wild Bill Donovan and Alan Dulles, recruited Nazi scientists and aided their importation into America. Among them were rocket scientist Wernher von Braun and the aeronautical physician Hubertus Strughold.
The problem that the United States was facing was there was all these German scientists who were kind of in the wind, loose, wasn't clear where they're going to end up. And the French, the British, the Russians, and the Americans were all trying to recruit them.
The Germans had developed lots of different advanced weapons. And they'd also done a lot of experimentation on human beings in the concentration camps. So they had a lot of medical data that we didn't have. They had, of course, the rocket scientists and the airplane scientists and all the rest of it. And Paperclip was our version of going into Europe and finding these guys and bringing them to the United States to work.
What we're missing in the documentation, we have physicians, aerospace medicine people, film people, ball bearings, projectile experts, all kinds of scientists. We're missing from the story the psychiatrists. But there must have been psychiatrists brought over, you know, in parallel to Strughold under Paperclip.
German financing came from America, came from Wall Street, and came from American corporations. Even the political support that Hitler got in Germany was to some extent traceable to American influences. Prior to World War II, American financiers, banks, corporations, all decided that there was money to be made in pre-war Germany. After all, they all knew that Germany was preparing to become a military aggressor, and it needed money to construct vehicles of war. They were spending a lot of money designing and building tanks and airplanes and military carriers and things like that, submarines, ships, and there was money to be made. And so Wall Street and some of the largest corporations like AT&T and even Ford Motor Company had very much involved with the Nazi regime.
The experiment that went on became known as Nazi Germany starts in World War I and the Versailles Treaty in Paris 1919. Basically giving the Germans the short end of the stick, giving them war reparations that they can't possibly pay, totally unrealistic. Now, this famous German banker named Helmar Schacht gets together with a guy from the Bank of England named Montague Norman, and they create something in 1932 called the Bank for International Settlements. And they use this as a clearinghouse for all the national debts, but really it's being used to launder money. What you find then is that same group, Helmar Schacht, becomes Hitler's banker. So Hitler is totally financed by these people who are making their lives out of pulling the wool over other people's eyes. And at the same time, they want to have the National Socialist experiment to test out the Prussian education system that they are using and about to roll out all over the world.
Following the 1945 completion of Operation Paperclip, the CIA created MKUltra, a top secret mind control research project, which was managed by Sidney Gottlieb, under the direction of Alan Dulles. The program began in the early 1950s, was officially sanctioned in 1953, and officially terminated in 1973. The program engaged in many illegal, unethical, and immoral activities. In particular, it used unwitting U.S. and Canadian citizens as its test subjects, which led to controversy regarding its legitimacy. MK MKUltra involved the pioneering of many methodologies to manipulate individuals' mental states and alter brain functions, including the surreptitious administration of psychoactive drugs and other chemicals, hypnosis, sensory deprivation, isolation, verbal and sexual abuse, and other various forms of torture.
When I interviewed John Marks about Search for the Manchurian Candidate, he said a very interesting thing to me. He had been given 10 boxes of CIA information on a Freedom of Information Act request, not his first. He had been trying to get this kind of information on the mind control program of the CIA in the 1950s, for a long time. And finally, as a kind of a sop, maybe even a joke, they gave him 10 boxes of materials that had nothing to do with the projects except the accounting data, the financial data, thinking that Marx wouldn't be able to do anything with it and they would, CIA would be perceived to have fulfilled the FOIA request. But Marx was too smart for them. He saw into the financial data and realized what he had his hands on, that this was not only MKUltra, mind control program of the CIA, but it was divided up into many, many, many sub-projects. And he had some of the funding details that provided the foundation for him to move forward in his research and discover what they were really up to.
The military started the Artichoke Project, and the Bluebird projects, which I think was the Navy one, and they were trying to figure out, can we make a Manchurian candidate? Can we make a super soldier? Can we control what people think and do and how they act on the battlefield? Can we make somebody braver than they really are? And it was getting up to where they were asking questions, can we create kamikazes like the Japanese had?
In 1994, President Clinton created the Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments, which was tasked with investigating the instances of federally funded research using ionizing radiation on human beings. Based on the documents made available to the committee, they identified nearly 4,000 cases of human radiation experiments taking place between 1944 and 1974. This included a series of federally funded experiments in which unsuspecting hospital patients were injected with plutonium. Many details of MKUltra experimentation were disclosed during a public hearing before the advisory committee.
I'm going to start. My name is Valerie Wolf. In listening to the testimony today, it all sounds really familiar. I am here to talk about a possible link between radiation and mind control experimentation that began in the late 1940s. The main reason that mind control research is being mentioned is because people are alleging that they were exposed as children to mind control, radiation, drugs, and chemical experimentation, which were administered by the same doctors who are known to have been involved in conducting both radiation and mind control research. Written documentation has been provided revealing the names of people and the names of research projects in statements from people across the country. It is also important to understand that mind control techniques and follow-ups into adulthood may have been used to intimidate these particular research subjects into not talking about their victimization in government research.
People talk about MKUltra in two senses. It's kind of like an umbrella term for all mind control programs. But technically, it's just a specific program that ran from the 50s into the 60s. And it stopped in 64. Therefore, MKUltra could not be operational today. But something like MKUltra with a different name surely must be. And I don't think there's any doubt in my mind at all that clearly mind control methods are used at Guantanamo Bay. I mean, there's all the hallmarks of mind control. There's hooding. There's forced sitting positions, there's sensory deprivation, sleep deprivation, all kinds of attacking the person's belief system, sexualizing the interrogation, subjecting them to things that go against their religious faith, probably hallucinogens and drugs, can't document that, waterboarding. So all the components of a mind control program are in place there. The hearings weren't really about that. and the women didn't have solid documentation, but they told the kind of stories that I hear over and over from mind control victims.
So Claudia Mullen and Christine Nicola get up on the stand in Washington and they say, yes, radiation, but it was only one part of mind control experiments that we were subjected to by the U.S. government starting out when we were children. And then somebody on the committee said, from what I've been told by witnesses, pretty much, thank you very much, and now we move on to the next witness. Right. Like, let's pretend none of this took place.
In the 19th century, Franz Mesmer's brand of hypnotism entertained countless audiences, which consequently evolved, both covertly and overtly, throughout the 20th century. CIA's Dr. George Estabrooks, a graduate of Harvard University and a Rhodes Scholar, finally created methods of reliable hypnotism, enabling its application to the science of social control.
George Estabrooks was a Canadian-born psychologist whose career was at Colgate University in upstate New York. As early as 1943, in his textbook Hypnotism, he described in great detail, going back to the Second World War, taking Marines or other military people, using hypnosis and other programming on them to create a new personality. So he calls that Jones A and Jones B. And the new program personality would be given an assignment, which could be a courier, penetration, any kind of assignment. And the out front regular person would have total amnesia, complete lack of knowledge of the assignment.
Estabrooks was a leading authority on hypnosis, programming soldiers during World War II to act as couriers who were not aware they were hypnotized operatives on a mission. In this manner, the OSS targeted political objectives through the covert methods of assassination and espionage, leveraging the science of hypnotism. Where hands-off hypnotic and pharmacological methods fail, the physical application of actual electrical stimulus directly to the brain becomes the next logical step. In 1964, Yale neuroscientist Jose Delgado implanted radio-controlled electrodes into the brain of an aggressive bull in an attempt to control its behavior in a ring with a matador. With the push of a button, Delgado himself was able to stop the bull in mid-charge. He didn't stop with the bull, but also conducted experiments on cats, monkeys, and even human test subjects.
You had people as young as 11 he was doing this to. One was a 16-year-old girl, and there's pictures in his books where she's kind of staring off into space, vacant. Another, she's strumming on a guitar. Another, she's pounding on the wall, all based on what button he's pushing on the transmitter box.
Delgado developed what he called a stimosiever that allowed him to target specific emotions and regulate behavior by aiming radio stimulation at different regions of the brain.
His idea of the future is, and this he was totally serious about and described in detail, we're going to put electrodes in the entire population, except probably Dr. Delgado himself, and a few elite generals, and we're going to control the entire population. And this is not going to be fascism. This is going to be the next step in evolution.
Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron was a Scottish-born psychiatrist who was president of the American Psychiatric Association from 1952 to 53, and later first president of the World Psychiatric Association. Cameron was directly involved in the brainwashing attempts of Central Intelligence Agency's top-secret MK-Ultra mind control program. Under directives from Sidney Gottlieb and funding from the CIA funneled through various front organizations, he spent years researching and experimenting with behavioral modification techniques.
It was here that the CIA funded a series of experiments, severe experiments. The work was done by the Institute's then director, Dr. Ewan Cameron. It is the closest experimentation to brainwashing yet disclosed. His work, unprecedented in psychiatry, consisted of three areas which he called sleep therapy, psychic driving, and the ultimate, depatterning. Dr. Maurice Dongier, current head of the Allen Memorial Institute.
in his psychic driving, so-called, type of therapy, he would give the patient intensive electric treatment in order to make the patient regress deeply, become forgetful, and then he would attempt to implant new ideas in the mind of the patient.
Now, to a layman, it would appear that Dr. Cameron was trying to take the slate and wipe it clean, the slate being the mind. In other words, brainwashing.
Exactly, that's a very good comparison.
Brainwashing.
Yes.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
And welcome back. We are premiering State of Mind here tonight on InfoWars Nightly News. Don't forget you can get it on DVD or on Blu-ray exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And every order also gets other extremist material, the Citizen Rulebook with jury nullification information. Juries judge the law as well as the facts. Do you understand that? If you think a law is unconstitutional as a jury, that's your emergency vote to nullify tyrannical prosecutions. Prosecutors don't want you to know that. These corrupt judges don't want you to know that. So get the films today at InfoWarsStore.com. You can also call toll-free 24 hours a day, 888-253-3139. Now, I wanted to ask James Lane and Richard Grove, what information did they garner from MKUltra, one of many programs we know about, and how do we see that manifesting today?
Well, I think one of the hierarchies that you see was Dr. Ewan Cameron. His protege was Dr. Jolyon West. Now, his protege was Dr. John Smith, and there's this whole line of these guys. Now, Ewan Cameron and Jolly West pioneered the three Ds, dependency, debilitation, and dread. Right, and this is what's used today in Guantanamo Bay. It makes sense that John Smith was the head of the psychiatric unit there. Now, Jolly West was an interesting character because he actually worked with Patty Hearst, Saran Saran, Jack Ruby, and was actually consulted with the defense team with Timothy McVeigh. So it seemed like every time one of these events occurred, they bring this guy in to kind of handle the, you know, damage control.
How obvious is that?
I mean, it's, yeah, plain as the nose in your face. But those three Ds, I mean, now, how these people go to these hospitals to try to get help, you know, and they were actually doing these experiments on them. I mean, this has all come out in the open.
Well, they take them to other countries. They would move them around. They would grab people's kids. I mean, it's incredible.
You know, they're in Canada. I mean, these people were actually coming in for help. And Ewan Cameron tried to just completely, you know, just wash their minds away and then build a new personality. And then come to find out, this is all part of the MKUltra experiments. And this guy is the head of every type of psychiatric organization in the country, you know. So policy is definitely being dictated by him.
And the things they did are just amazing. I mean, electroshock, one dose of it, kills massive brain cells. I mean, this is like hitting somebody upside the head with a ball-peen hammer. Richard, your take on this.
They're trying to discover the parameters of the human being and how to crush our souls. They're basically, you know, if they want to wipe a human being's mentality and program a new one, they see us like a hard drive where you can just press delete by doing some electroshock therapy. And it's all about breaking people's will and making them submit to their so-called authority. And part of the psychological warfare is that it gets a lot of people in public to support that instead of asking
questions. And who gives them the right to abuse us? Again, like the UN, above the law, diplomatic immunity, these globalists. Steal $1 trillion, become a world leader. Steal $1, get arrested.
Well, and they gain power by being able to predict our activities. Through predictive programming, through collecting all this information, through these experiments, they can predict how people will react in certain situations, and they can plan on that. And they can, until the herd outgrows that mentality, it's very predictable, and they're not going to change it unless you resist.
Well said, Richard. Let's go back to more of the film, State of Mind.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Dr. Ewan Cameron was a MKUltra contractor. Officially, it says that he didn't have top secret clearance, but I'm sure that, in fact, he did. The reason I say that is he was, at different times, president of the Quebec Psychiatric Association, the Canadian Psychiatric Association, the Society of Biological Psychiatry, and the World Psychiatric Association.
Ewan Cameron was the most famous psychiatrist in the world during the 1950s. you name a psychiatric association of any size or scope, he was the president of it.
He became a psychiatrist. In fact, at one time, he was the president of the World Psychiatric Foundation, and he ended up immigrating over here from Scotland and was working in Canada under Sid Gottlieb, and he headed up one of the projects dealing with LSD and with different types of mind control projects that he had, especially hypnosis.
His experiments were basically, there's kind of two components to it. One is psychic driving, and the other is depatterning. So depatterning is you give massive amounts of electric shock to the person, like 100 plus treatments, with 6 times the usual amount of electricity per treatment. Completely wipe their minds out, so they don't know who they are, where they are, they don't recognize their children. And then once they're in that state, you can add on barbiturates and other drugs, keep them asleep for weeks at a time, or kind of like half asleep, and then play tape loops over and over and over and over. That's the psychic driving. And the tape loops will be in the doctor's voice or the person's voice. And this is all supposed to program a new personality.
It has been alleged in some cases that Cameron held patients against their will for weeks at a time, drugged and unconscious, under the threat of being committed to an institution for life if they did not participate in his treatments.
He began a program of torture, and I don't use the word lightly, on patients who had no idea this is why they were coming to him. They were people who came to him for therapy, for help. And he experimented on them as a torturer would to create new personalities.
Cameron operated with Rockefeller funding at the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal, Quebec, where he contended that it was first necessary to depattern the minds of his patients in order for them to have a shot at recovery. He also participated in the Nuremberg trials of 1945, interviewing many of the top Nazi defendants.
After World War II and the creation of the CIA, the need for a truth drug and drugs that could perform, that the CIA could use for other purposes, increased. They turned to the Bureau of Narcotics and Harry Anslinger. And again, Anslinger anteed up Agent George White to be his lead agent in this program called MKUltra. It started basically in 1952 in New York City. White was working with a CIA officer named Sidney Gottlieb. Gottlieb was chief of the Technical Services Division at the time, and he had access to a lot of LSD. CIA scientists had decided was the drug that they were going to focus on now. Pot wasn't considered quite potent enough to do the things that they wanted to do. White conscripted a couple of federal narcotic agents to help him, a couple of informants, narcotic agent informants to help him, and went into the streets of New York and got a softcore pornographer named Gil White to help him as well. Apparently White had his own sexual perversions, which have been written about. He was into S&M, so he had a couple of qualifications for the job, which went beyond just being a federal agent who could perform these functions. He actually was good at acting out the sorts of things that went on in the drug underworld. In 1953, the program was formalized, and it was called Midnight Climax. And White had a safe house in New York City, with which the CIA outfitted with a two-way mirror with microphones and recording devices, so that White and the CIA scientists could actually film people who had been surreptitiously dosed with LSD. The program expanded beyond merely LSD. And what they found out was that the safe houses themselves were probably the most valuable aspect of this program. Prostitutes that were in their employ that would bring people to these apartments, and they could actually record them while they were doing drugs. In 1960, the CIA opened another safe house in New York City. And I talked to the people who were running this safe house. And one of the narcotic agents said to me that they felt that the CIA was actually using this safe house when dignitaries were visiting the UN or politicians were coming to New York City to talk to the mayor or state or even federal officials, that they were using the filming them and using potentially using the films for purposes of political blackmail.
Another CIA-funded Harvard graduate was Dr. Martin T. Orne, whose expertise in hypnotism, psychiatry, and psychology was a valuable asset to national security. A close friend of Dr. George Estabrooks, Orne's work in hypnoprogramming at Cornell in the 1960s was funded by the Human Ecology Fund and the Scientific Engineering Institute, both of which received funding from the CIA. To provide cover for operations like Midnight Climax, the CIA's MKUltra psychiatrists formed the False Memory Syndrome Foundation to obscure the facts of these covert experiments, creating confusion enough to deny acts of pedophilia, cult abuse, and other inconvenient truths of CIA activities. The False Memory Syndrome Foundation's board was a who's who of MKUltra. There, Dr. Orne was joined by another CIA MKUltra psychiatrist, Dr. Jolyon West, who was the protege of Dr. Ewan Cameron. Like his esteemed MKUltra colleagues, West was infamous for his hypnoprogramming abilities. Using words to make patients believe that their memories of abuse were just figments of their imaginations.
The people who started the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, Pamela and Peter Freud, stated to public that Peter had been falsely accused of incest by his daughter, whose name is Pamela. She's now the editor, has been for quite a few years, the editor of the Journal of Trauma and Dissociation, to which I've contributed numerous papers, and it's really the main journal for the study of multiple personality, which was created on purpose in the Manchurian Candidate programs under MKUltra, Artichoke, Bluebird. Contractors on that included Jolly West and Martin Orne, and they're on the board of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, which says that all these cases of multiple personality are created by the therapist, and all the memories are false memories.
I cannot dismiss what our intelligence agencies have been able to do by way of mind programming in different forms of research, Project Bluebird, MKUltra, and so on and so forth. Well, let me just say it this way. Jules Romaine, testifying on behalf of the CIA to Congress, said, and this paraphrase is going to be so close to word for word, it's unbelievable. We now know that we can take a man and, given sufficient time, educate him to kill his mother and father and eat them in a stew.
How will power gravitate into the hands of those who control information? Through the internet, through wireless networks, through smart grids, smart devices, and smart meters, to monitor and control the personal behavior of every citizen in the grid. How has the role of harnessing the minds of human resources shaped the 20th and now the 21st centuries? This single pattern emerges from all the seeming chaos. The role of science as juxtaposed to the mind has not been used to help individuals. Rather, at every turn, at every discovery's emergence, knowledge is being used to restrain individuals. Learned helplessness is just one example.
And so in the 1970s, they discovered through these experiments with dogs that if you put a dog, two groups of dogs in a situation, one group of dog, they had control over when they were being shocked. They could use their nose and hit a panel and stop the shock. And another group of dogs, they had the equal amount of shocks, but they no matter what they did, they couldn't control the stoppage of shocks. They discovered this phenomenon called learned helplessness, and that the dogs that who had no control over stopping their shots, they would become passive and depressed, and that when you put them in another task where all the dogs actually had control over stopping their shock by kind of jumping over this short barrier, the dogs that had learned helplessness, in other words, the dogs in the previous experiment would learn that there was nothing that they can do to stop their pain, they did not bother trying. National elections is not equal to democracy. Democracy means you really have some power over things that affect your life, okay? But when Americans think that their democracy equals national elections, and they go and they have senseless wars and corporate control with a Republican in office like George W., and they think, well, we're going to stop these senseless wars and corporate control, and we're going to go and vote for Obama, this Democrat, and they get, what do they get? Senseless wars and corporate control. And so there's a kind of learned helplessness that sinks in there.
How are the attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, and values of a society transformed such that the needs of the individual are always in conflict with the demands of the group? The early 20th century trend of conspicuous consumption, or the trading of that which is valuable and sensible for that which is superficial and frivolous, swept over America and other countries around the world with the help of a few minds who were focused on changing our lives before we were even born. Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, is well known as the father of modern propaganda and public relations, and for his application of psychological techniques to the field of advertising.
People have a herd instinct. They tend to move in groups. They make conclusions based on emotion and feelings and desires.
Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, the archetypal psychologist, psychiatrist, openly bragged that there was a ruling elite that had taken control of society and that could basically program people like machines to walk off the edge of a cliff if ordered to do so. He was the guy that said, don't call yourself the Department of War, call yourself the Department of Defense. And he wrote book after book, like the book Propaganda, 1922, bragging about how we were all dumb animals and how the public mind was in his hand. They couldn't sell pork bellies. They were seen as junk meat, only used as flavoring in soups. They came out and said, no breakfast is complete without eggs and bacon. And showed a woman, you know, in the newsreel sitting there cooking it. And he said, look, I can make these people do anything I want. And so he is really the archetypal father of brainwashing and propaganda right as the age of television began. And they took his sciences and just wrecked this country.
Some of his most famous clients included Procter & Gamble, General Motors, General Electric, the United Fruit Company, Westinghouse Electric, Time Magazine, NBC, and CBS.
He looked at what Uncle Freud had plumbed out, how the unconscious worked, and devised in his own mind the idea that you could cause people to do what you wanted them to do because they chose to do it. Indeed, in his work, Propaganda, he makes it clear that it is the duty of the intellectual elite to orchestrate the beliefs and behaviors of the public in order to have a cohesive society.
They got together and said, well, you know, people are too darn dumb. We have to program them mentally to do what they're supposed to do. Political science is largely based today on Bernays' work.
In 1917, Bernays served on the Committee for Public Information, otherwise known as the Creel Committee, which set out to change public opinion in favor of the United States' involvement in World War I. At the request of Woodrow Wilson, Bernays personally attended the Paris Peace Conference of 1919, the same year that he would found the first public relations firm in the United States.
Advancing some of this work, of course, he was commissioned by Woodrow Wilson and to assist in selling the idea of World War I, that it was about spreading democracy throughout Europe. He is, for all intent and purposes, the father of what we call today neuromarketing.
It has been widely reported that Joseph Goebbels had employed Bernays' crystallizing public opinion the first book written on the emerging field of public relations, while formulating his own propaganda campaigns for Nazi Germany.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
And we're back talking to the makers of this film as we premiere it tonight, State of Mind. I wanted to ask a couple of you guys, Austin Green and Chris Emery, how does media and advertising play in to the conditioning, the brainwashing? Because I find that to be the more subtle and more pervasive. I mean, you watch any show, dads are bad, families are bad, government's God, government's perfect, gun owners are evil. I mean, it's really over the top. And they call that kind of just the low-level propaganda.
Well, my experience working in front of the camera for 18 years, I was in print, parts in movies, commercials. I saw the subtleties, whether it be on a sexual overtone, the colors, the basic senses, whether it be smell, sight, whatever the case may be. And it got to the point where I just said, wow, this is way too much. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. You are actually conditioned from, like Richard said, from the days you're in diapers. Some of the parents just flop you in front of the TV because that's the babysitter. That is, like you had mentioned earlier in one of the trailers, Alex, like sitting in front of a barrel of a gun. You really have to watch that because your mind, not only because of the brainwaves that are controlled, but of the pictures, the images, and telling the child, hey, this is normal. This is good. That is not good. And so as a movie maker, I says, I'm getting behind the camera and I want to try something different. I want to get the truth out there. We turn this thing completely around as a film crew, 180 degrees. And the mind control, the deception, just whether it be subtle or overt and so forth, it's unbelievable. We really have to take control of that.
I mean, this is the interface that the globalists or the elites use to interface with the rest of the population to you know, further their agenda. And so the media and the advertising is their tool for controlling the masses. It's the only way they can interact with all of us at a single time because there's just too many of us.
That's a great point. And through this, you can see what their worldview is, what their end game is, and what they think of us. And it's a nightmarish thing they're pushing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you look at what's going on right now. I mean, children nowadays, you know, are basically, they never grow up. I mean, that's
well,
really
they're brain
what's
damaged. They're admitting that television lowers IQ. Mm-hmm. It dumbs them down. They don't know how to communicate. They are these one-dimensional spectators.
Mm-hmm. They have no sense of self-reliance because, you know, all the shows on TV basically show you that, you know, to be funny and cool, basically, you shouldn't learn anything. You shouldn't actually study about anything or know about anything real in the world.
Oh, yeah. It's not cool to be informed.
No, absolutely not. It's cool to, you know, get drunk all the time and to, you know, basically have no morals and no values. I mean, all the hot shows on television now are all about people who have no morals and no values.
I know. And you run into the general public, they're like repeating TV things. They're like a computer that thinks if they put out false info at you, it like works. And they're one-dimensional, unhappy, not even real people. It's really actually sad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I used to enjoy television until I started to see the subtlety behind what they were doing and the programming, especially in movies as well. And nowadays it's the point I don't even want to watch any of this stuff anymore because it's just garbage. It's just
Once you know about it, the programming, it is over the top. You're just seeing it all. And then I talk to TV execs and people, and they go, no, we know, we don't like it, but this is what the bosses say.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, so your kids are all going to be screwed up, too. That's the crazy thing. Even the so-called elite, they're not getting out of this. But in their will to dominate us and dumb us down, they're really doing it to themselves.
Yeah, and it's kind of cartoonish at this point. I mean, the way that people are overdoing everything in every piece of media. I mean, there's no such thing as a subtle point delivered through media anymore. It all has to be in your face, and every time it's in your face, it's never something that's going to help you live your life and find more satisfaction and thrive in the world. It's something that's going to undermine your needs as an individual and the needs of your family and your friends as well.
I saw that happen actually to a greater degree as an adult, going into the different talent agencies, some of the top ones in Chicago and in Minneapolis and in Atlanta, having the adults, the actors, taking part in this advertising, thinking that was the real world as soon as they left the agency. I says, what, are you kidding me? Come on, snap out of it. You are a human being. You have the ability to take control of what's going on. Your perception of reality is so jaded and so warped. Get out and find out what's really going on. Shut the TV off. And it was a complete dichotomy and opposite of what I was taught, you know, in the industry.
Well, I mean, these people are such narcissists, too. They buy into it, and they actually believe it, and they are like robots. And it's all like they fake stimulate themselves. they sit there and like program themselves, and they're not even conscious of it. It is unbelievable.
Well, and the flicker rate, I mean, that's been shown to put people into a hypnotic state. There's so much information on the news channels, the tickers. It's too much for the brain to take, and it actually go into a subconscious state, and they're just plugging the mainstream reality right into your subconscious.
Exactly, and we're here trying to go into the matrix to get people out of it. Let's go back to more of the premiere here on InfoWars Nightly News of State of Mind.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Moving beyond Bernays, other luminaries in the manufacturing of public consent included Walter Lippmann and Ivy Lee, both of whom complemented these tactics by expanding the breadth and depth of mass media entrainment of individual minds.
And then I read 1928, book by Walter Lippmann, talking about public relation and public opinion, and basically saying the same thing, that the public is not inherently irrational, but they can use PR and propaganda and media to play upon people's existing irrationality instead of introducing them to the concepts and definitions of that which exists. So instead of creating world peace by putting everyone on the same page, by giving us a method to discern fact from fiction, they use that gap in our perception to play tricks on us. So that's all I've ever seen during human history, is human beings playing tricks on other human beings.
As for Ivy Lee, he was not only popular with some of America's most prestigious corporations and foundations, he also found time in his busy schedule to personally counsel John D. Rockefeller, to represent Standard Oil, and was one of the earliest members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Moreover, in the 1930s, Ivy Lee was a consultant to Adolf Hitler, tasked with developing strategies to improve Germany's image in the United States and abroad.
Kids are impressionable. That's why here at this station, we watch the programs and commercials your child watches carefully. He may see bad guys, but not in the role of heroes. He'll learn that crime doesn't pay. Because your child's welfare is our concern, too. That's part of our code. The code of the National Association of Broadcasters for television and the greater public interest.
Waco was an odd situation regarding both the law enforcement aspects of it, regarding ATF going in and doing the raid on the Branch Davidian compound, as well as the fact the Special Operations Command was called to help. This is one of those situations where everything that could go wrong pretty much went wrong from day one. The Clinton administration and Janet Reno started looking for options. One of the options that they decided to engage on was bringing Special Operations Command in to advise them on quote-unquote psychological operations. When the Special Operations Command elements arrived, they began giving advice to the law enforcement individuals on how to go about implementing specific themes. Within the psychological operations community, they typically look at themes of how to modify, adapt, or somehow reshape the thinking of a target group, of an audience. These specific techniques, which were brought to bear on the Branch Davidians, were developed for military operations overseas, primarily against a foreign target. So another question has to be asked, what is the wisdom of using psychological operations techniques developed for a foreign audience against a U.S. target? Again, a very controversial issue. How does one defend themselves against strategic information, propaganda? It's a very simple answer. Ask questions. Always check your source. I, as a public figure, am often having to speak publicly about issues and information. I look at everything. I've been criticized by my friends, oh my God, you look at Fox News, you look at CNN. Absolutely, because the false information being provided to the mainstream outlets means something. So why are they saying things a certain way?
How are the habits of individuals changed and then reinforced to create new behaviors preferable to the collective? In the 21st century, the method has evolved little from millennia ago. Only the technology has changed. Today's television provides those who leverage public airwaves with an opportunity to control individuals far beyond the simple linguistic programming of radio.
The major point of television is the commercial. The programming is designed to kind of keep people hanging in there long enough to watch a commercial, so, and that they're in a more passive, zombified state to buy into the goofy, silly, commercial. That is the point of it.
You are willingly subjecting yourself and your family to psychological warfare assault, not just with the semantics, not just with the messages, but the very flicker rate of the television on record, patented to put you into a dreamlike sleep state where you're highly suggestible.
You think you're looking at a constant picture. You're really not. Modern televisions, you're looking at LEDs, and they're going on and off. Because they're going on and off, there's a brain entrainment process that takes place. To make it real simple, it comes down to this. Research shows us that the average person, when placed in front of a television set in less than 3 minutes, will go into alpha. Hypnosis is, for all intent and purposes, objectified by brainwave activity. If I'm looking at your brainwaves, an EEG, in normal consciousness, you're operating at what we think of as beta. So you're going to be 15 to 30 cycles per second. 30 is on the stress side, but that's typically where you're going to fall. In alpha, you're going to be 7 to 14 cycles per second, 8 to 14 cycles, depending on the scale. Now, alpha consciousness, for all intent and purposes, is a state of hyper-suggestibility.
And it keeps people sedated. You know, they use them in televisions are used in prisons. They're cheaper than hiring more guards. Of course, people are going to be then told that it's okay not to just have one television, but to have three, four televisions in a house and to be not watching it just on a normal television set, but on their phone and on their laptop. And you want to normalize this kind of crazy thing of people spending 5, 6, 7 hours a day watching television.
Television has been the ultimate tool of mind control. And for more than 60 years, children are set in front of it as a babysitter, while they are bombarded with images of violence and decadence and corruption. And what it does is it just acclimates the child that when they see a real person dying on the street, they don't go over and aid them. We see this happening because, oh, that's entertainment. In fact, people now have been recorded laughing at someone hurt because it's just more entertainment. They've had their basic empathy disconnected, cut off.
The role of advertising has certainly evolved away from one of utilitarian necessity in communicating the form, function, and value of a product. The application of the behavioral and psychological sciences has played a seminal role in the way corporations now sell products to consumers in American society and internationally. In 1921, after leaving Johns Hopkins University, John B. Watson, the founder of behaviorism, took a job with the J. Walter Thompson Company, and by 1928, he was vice president of the entire firm. Watson introduced new market research techniques into advertising and discovered that sales could be influenced by manipulating images associated with brand names. For instance, blindfolded smokers could not tell the difference between brand name and generic. J. Walter Thompson remains one of the most powerful advertising agencies in the world today.
Most people believe that you're going along through life making your own choices, making your own decisions, okay? You know, I decided to do this, I decided to do that, you know, I did that. By watching the brain live time, neuromarketers today know exactly what product to place where, what, how to package that product, what colors you're going to respond to, what images you're going to respond to, what kind of pre-programming already exists that they can couple it to.
And so when you have a society where people are being told at every level to consume, to buy their way into happiness, and that's their only salvation, that's their only way into happiness, is to then you have what I call a kind of fundamentalist consumer society. How is that problematic? Why is that dangerous? Well, when you have people who only care about buying things, you're gonna make people weaker in a lot of ways. You're gonna certainly make them less self-reliant. And when they're told that you just buy things, buy your way into happiness, they don't realize that you can gain strength by doing a lot of things yourself, okay? You also make people self-absorbed. I mean, a point of all advertising, which is the technology of consumerism, is to get people to care, you know, over-focus on every one of their needs and every one of their feelings. So if they're having a bad day, you know, they must focus on that and focus on how depressed they are.
Billions and billions and billions of dollars have been spent privately and publicly looking at how to tap into your psyche, how to cause you to make choices that you wouldn't otherwise make, to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do, to consume, whether it's a product or a plank in a political platform.
I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
To me, with the media just willing to report whatever the government tells it to report, that gives the government free rein to create whatever story or narrative it wants to create for whatever purpose it wants to create a story for. And that's where we're at.
That's why when you put on the 6 o'clock news and you switch from one channel to another, they take their commercial breaks at the same time, they tell the same news stories, and they tell the same news stories at the same time. But then you go to the internet, you go to BBC out of London, or one of the other foreign news services, and you see all kinds of news that we never hear about here.
Mass media today is the cutting edge of psychological warfare. And it is nothing but a all-out assault against the general public. When you watch mainline establishment television, you are putting yourself in front of the barrel of a gun.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
We're back. I'm going to talk to James Lane and Richard Grove right now. How are the ideas of Huxley's Ultimate Revolution integrated into American culture? And I want to discuss the pharmacological control of the anti-authoritarian personality. And I want to talk about what are the solutions to overcome the control.
Well, the Huxley family was deeply into eugenics, and Aldous Huxley was a famous 20th century writer who died the same day as Jack Kennedy, oddly enough. So when you look into his writings about utopias that they were trying to create, technotronic elite, these ideas of the ultimate revolution, that they would harness human beings and they would love their servitude through pharmaceutical methods and all these other things that he described back in 1961, these are really all reflections of MKUltra. And so when you ask, who came up with these ideas of MKUltra, like, that was an operational project. Whose needs was it serving? It's serving an elite class who's a predatory class. They're intraspecific kleptoparasites. They are of the same species, but they are preying on us. They are plundering our production, and they use knowledge, the knowledge gap, as a power gap, as a wealth gap, and that is the harness of control.
Well, I think the pharmacological control is seen today. I mean, we've kind of got an amalgam of Brave New World in 1984. And, I mean, Huxley, when you read Brave New World, I mean, this is what is happening today. I mean, they actually call one of the drugs now Soma, you know? I mean, it's like they're not even hiding that.
That's from Brave New World.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And the whole agenda was laid out there. And all you have to do is, you know...
Well, it's like they're using 1984 as an instruction manual.
And so now, anybody goes in for anything. A kid is a kid. You know, we just called it daydreaming, but, you know, when I was a kid. Now it's like they want to shove ADD drugs down the throat. You know, anybody that goes in for the slightest thing, maybe you're having a bad day. Now all of a sudden you're diagnosed with this major disorder, and big pharma is giving you drugs. They're funding hospitals to where they go in, and if you want the money, well, you've got to push drugs as the only solution. And I think that this is, you know, Huxley called it, how many years ago?
Unbelievable. Let's go back to the clip here, the final segment of the film, then we're going to have extras. I want to talk about solutions at the end and then intro some of these extras because I haven't seen these. I've seen the film. I haven't seen the extras. You tell me how good they are. So intro these for myself and everybody else when we come back. Here's the conclusion of State of Mind.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Cognitive dissonance occurs when individuals lack consistency in their methods of thinking, and thus, contradictory elements attempting to reside simultaneously as fact create frustration, confusion, anger, and aggression. It is the difference between what you think the world is and what the world actually is.
Cognitive dissonance is really, again, a fancy psychologist term for, again, some common sense, which is this tension that people will experience when they have two opposing kind of ideas.
The role of psychology in advertising is to create cognitive dissonance, or the conflict between what you have and what you want, and to fill that void by adapting your behavior accordingly in order to achieve your reward. If an entire society can be properly dosed with mind-altering but culturally approved drugs, this cognitive dissonance may be largely assuaged. With social control as their aim, the ruling class sought to expand their ability to influence the individual. Mind games, those of psychological warfare and advertising, were simply not enough. The opportunity existed to employ chemical treatments physically affecting the hardware of the brain to complement the already existing harmful software in the form of effective propaganda and advertising. The tax-free foundations, including the Carnegie and Ford Foundations, followed the lead of the Rockefeller Foundation in the widespread funding of pharmacological solutions to social control.
And they say, we will give you $1 million for your medical school if you teach pharmaceutical drugs in your medical school. So the doctors come out, they're very happy because they got this wonderful building, all these high-paid teachers, the best talent, the best brains you can buy, all funded by tax-exempt foundation money. But what comes out of that is that the doctors are taught drugs, drugs, drugs.
Psychiatry itself as a profession is one gigantic mind control operation.
What happens when the habits demonstrated by groups of individuals reflect the outsourcing of their intelligence to so-called experts and authoritarians who are self-appointed to make decisions on their behalf?
You can have a psychiatrist testify in court that somebody has ADHD or clinically depressed or this or that, but every one of those official mental disorders is a total lie and a fraud because there is no diagnostic test for any of these disorders. Not ADHD, not bipolar, not depression, not schizophrenia, not anything that you've ever heard of that is a discrete mental disorder.
The American Psychiatric Association has a committee, and they create this thing called the DSM, their Diagnostic Bible. And they decide what goes in there. And they decide that certain people who don't pay attention to boring things have this disorder called attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You know, and if you accept that you have a disease, as opposed to like, well, maybe I'm somebody who can really pay attention to things that are interesting me, but I'm somebody who's stubborn enough to not really want to pay attention to things that are boring for me. And that maybe that's a good thing. That's how you maybe have something really a worthy contribution, as opposed to allowing people who are bores to fill up your whole life. You only want to listen to things that actually really are interesting for you. If you accept these ideas, though, that you have a disease or there's something essentially wrong with you, you're going to be more a prey to authorities controlling you.
And some of these drugs, such as the SSRI antidepressants like Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, and so on, are known to induce violent behavior, including suicide and homicide. And you have a profession like psychiatry that is seeding the country, like planting seeds in a garden and a farm. With these diagnoses and these drugs, this is Operation Chaos.
Part of the problem of psychology, psychiatry, when it comes to diagnoses is that they really seem to have no political awareness. of their pathologizing of anti-authoritarianism, of stubbornness, of rebellion. This is, I think, part of the reason for that is I think that an overwhelming number of psychiatrists, psychologists, mental health professionals are more kind of compliant people. And when they see non-compliant, more stubborn, more oppositional kinds of patients, especially young people, that creates a lot of anxiety for them.
And so you have this power, and you do this for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. These little seeds, which are drugs, you see, that affect the brain in various unpredictable and horrendous ways, and you have that power to do that for 50 years. Don't you think you could really call that mind control? That's mind control par excellence.
If habit is thus the enormous flywheel of society, and habit keeps us all within the bounds of ordinance, then it is our habits which enslave us to the so-called children of fortune. For their fortune exists only because our habits prevent us from outpacing the status quo and growing in the light direction. How might we begin to change our habits such that our actions are no longer in conflict with our needs as individuals to survive and thrive in this world? And what will happen if we do not resist?
We're heading toward a system where we're going to have economic collapse, real crisis, be much worse than anything we've seen. We're going to be in a position where most people won't understand how it came about. They won't realize that it's the result of government policies, of corrupt politicians. And so therefore they're going to go to those same corrupt politicians and endorse the same policies, and we're going to get more of the same. And that is where we're headed.
It all goes back to people who are smarter than us, who are polymaths, who are organized and have a lot of office supplies and infinite money because they can print it out of thin air and everyone else takes it and says, this is real. That's not real. Your mind is real. Objective reality is real. Wisdom is valuable because we can learn how to survive together with that. But all these things that they make us think are valuable, like petroleum or any of these other commodities, they're all fear-based. If we just really understood what was going on and our voluntary role in it, we wouldn't play such a role in our own servitude.
So we come to a point in our lives where it's fair to ask, what was the last original thought you had? Would the way you walk, the way you talk, the vocabulary that you use, all of these things are built into the expectation you have of yourself based on the role you have chosen to play in the theater of life as it's been defined to you.
Well, I think we're seeing what the consequences are of just complying with everything right now, because that's what most people in America do at this point in time. The consequences are every day you're losing more of your constitutional rights, and your freedom is being taken away more and more and more by this all-encompassing security state being brought to you by your United States government.
If you out there watching don't wake up and begin to investigate these facts and prove them for yourself and take action against these people, you are not just committing suicide against yourself, but against all of good humanity.
The consequences to non-resistance of control is losing everything that makes us human, that we love, that we cherish.
Now think about which laws have been passed recently to give you more rights. There aren't any. There aren't any at all.
A lot of folks who are critical thinkers, they realize how powerful these kind of giant corporate government entity is out there. And that kind of understanding that a critical thinker has can be quite painful and can lead to them being depressed and apathetic and giving up. And so we see that throughout history, that a lot of your really great critical thinkers sometimes succumb to depression and substance abuse because they're so overwhelmed, as opposed to others who figure out that conundrum. That if I'm going to be a critical thinker, I'm going to see how powerful these oppressive authorities in my life are, but I can't allow that pain to make me just kind of give up into kind of fatalism and defeatism.
Information, knowledge equals power and control.
Whatever the public face of something is, whatever they're talking about publicly, there's something else over here they're probably not looking at. And that's why it's important for individuals to look beyond what is being presented publicly.
It's input, processing, and output. And what we're trying to do is keep a clean signal, that's knowledge of that which exists, and to filter out the noise. And we do that by dismissing the arbitrary, things that aren't substantial, and identifying fallacies, because the way that people can effectively lie is through words, and it's through our own belief in these words that makes it take control of our lives. So in understanding these essential aspects of how they control us, we can learn individually to become free and to communicate amongst each other how to do that more efficiently.
Don't buy the propaganda. Don't believe what's in the mainstream media. It sometimes is true, but often not.
There's only one thing that we can do to change the course that we're now on, and that is to recapture the system. All of the positions of power in America today, and to a large extent around the world, are in the hands of collectivists, people who believe in the very system we have. They like it.
First thing we have to do is we have to take the schools back, and then we have to educate the kids that, hey, this happened in the past. These are the things that happened.
You have to have a conscience, and you have to take a stand. And no matter how many people want to get you in the group, don't be part of that. Because you're going to lose your individuality if you become part of the group.
You have to kind of forgive yourself. And once you do that, you can have greater compassion for other people who are still being victimized, who are still believing that those who are controlling their lives actually care about them.
A large segment of the population that are so-called conspiracy theorists, but I don't have a problem with these people. They should be questioning things that are going on, because we can't trust the media to accurately report stories.
Activism can help a society that's already falling under the weight of its own stupidity fall a couple of generations earlier, all right, to be able to move into a healthier society.
When you get down to the ideas of what we can do to free ourselves, you have to first look at what exists. So what exists is, this system is organized, it is there to control the crowd. And if you do not resist it, you lose all individuality, you lose your identity, you outsource your thinking, you are being denied your life, and that is every bit as serious as someone trying to stab you in the back, because without your life, liberty, and the ownership of your own work and your own labor, you have no rights under their systems.
Freedom means freedom, not some freedom, but all freedom. As long as you don't take away the life, liberty, or property of your fellow man, you should be free to do everything that you want to do. That's what built this country in the first place. So the solution to the problem is to return to that high ideal, return to that high ground. Then everything is possible.
You don't have to like the system you're in, and frankly, you have every right to speak out against it.
Freedom of the individual is where you start, and then the individual can say, what am I going to do with my own freedom? How am I going to use my imagination and my creative power to invent realities of my own and make them fact in the world, as opposed to sitting back here passively and letting elites manufacture reality for me?
Humanity is worth resisting this, and if you don't stand up against these diabolical globalists, you are turning our species and our entire history and our entire future over to these people. You're betraying our ancestors who fought against incredible odds so that we might have some basic freedoms. And you're betraying yourself, your children, your family, and all future human generations. We can't turn our species over to total darkness. We can't turn our species over to people who love to hurt innocents and who hate beauty. We must resist the New World Order. We must free our minds and awaken the human spirit. It is time for the sleeping giant that is humanity to awaken.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Again, that concludes the premiere of State of Mind here on InfoWars Nightly News. This will be archived at PrisonPlanet.tv for subscribers, and we're also going to post it on the Alex Jones channel on YouTube. But as much as they censor that, who knows if we'll even have a YouTube next week. It's getting crazy. So it's very important, so we can also make future films, to get State of Mind, The Psychology of Control, on DVD or Blu-ray at InfoWarsStore.com, so you can show this to your friends and family. And also feel free to have people over to your house or to share your username and passcode with them for PrisonPlanet.tv so they can watch this full presentation. I think really augments the info for people that are watching and are members of PrisonPlanet.tv. But I wanted to give each of you about a minute and a half or so going around the table here with James Lane first, to crystallize any final points about the documentary State of Mind.
I just really want to ask people out there to get this and show this to your friends and family. I think that this is a really powerful tool that you can affect true change.
Absolutely. Richard Grove?
We're all born into control, and you can't do much about it until you use your five senses, observe what's going on, identify what you need in your life. I also identify the contradictions that you don't need in your life, and then make changes. Change your habits, because it's the habit that is the enormous flywheel of society, and that's how they control us.
The thing that I want to ask everyone is, you know, stop accepting what the establishment is force-feeding down your throat through school and your job and everywhere else. Start questioning everything. Stop accepting the fact, or stop thinking that everything you were taught in school is reality. There's so much more out there to discover. And this film is really just a stepping stone, a point where you can see that there are all these branches of information that go out there, and then you can take that initiative upon yourself to go out there and research this more in depth and find out that we're not just making this up. This stuff is real. There's real information out there. Truth is truth.
Chris Emery.
I would suggest tomorrow, call the cable company, cut off your cable service. Shut your TV off, read more, spend more time with your family, and get out and find out what's really going on. Don't let the media control your life.
That's right. Don't consume globalist propaganda media. Analyze it when you have to, but produce your own media. Make your own art. Be creative. Use your imagination. Get outside the box. And stand up against the globalists, because we know they're bad guys. You know, people out there, you know you're good guys. You know you're good men and women out there. You know you care about humanity. Well, stand up and be a leader. And it starts little, but we're going to be able to change the world by all of us doing little things. Going back to James Lane in closing, we're going to show back-to-back some clips here of some of the things that hit the cutting room floor, not because they weren't powerful, because, as you said, the film just couldn't be 10 hours long. Tell us about a few of these clips we're about to see here in closing with the documentary film and extras of State of Mind.
Well, we've got a few clips here. We got one from Anthony Schaefer. I mean, he had so much information that, we just couldn't put in the film. Douglas Valentine, he's actually going to be speaking about a story from whenever he was a child where that really woke him up to how authority is just, you know, accepted.
And some other clips as well.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, and we'll end it with these clips back-to-back here in a moment. I just want to say great job to all of you. Fabulous job. And, Chris, I think I've known you like 10 years. And you guys have known a couple years now, and just getting to know you guys. Very, very exciting what you've done. And it's good to see independent filmmakers out of the gates in just the last few years put out two great films. So we salute everybody involved there with Free Mind Films. And I hope that all of you will support what they've done and the InfoWar by getting it on DVD and Blu-ray at InfoWarsStore.com, the exclusive distributor online of these documentary films. And so here are some of the clips from the film that did not make the final cut. And then we'll see you back tomorrow night, Lord willing, on the Thursday edition of InfoWars Nightly News.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Society, people think, well, they don't exist anymore, do they? Well, they do, and Quigley wrote about them. He said that he had no aversion to the secret society. In fact, he said he had been invited into its inner ranks. He was never a member of the elite himself, but he was brought in as their historian, you might say, to record their events and put it in the public record so that they could have a permanent record for all time. And he said he was invited into the group, and he was able to examine their private records. And then he said, I have no aversion to it or its goals or its policies. He said, the only thing I disagree with is that they hope to remain secret. Most wars in modern history are fought for the enhancement of power and wealth on the part of the elites that run those governments. They want to expand their influence. They want greater dominance. Maybe they want the natural resources. In other words, they're not for reasons that we have been told. It's a fact of life. And there's no clearer example of that, I believe, than in World War I and, of course, in World War II. But the question, Ron, was World War I. The American people at that time were very complacent about the war going on in Europe. It was a war between, you know, Germany and France and England. Okay, I'm sorry about that, but leave us out of it. We declared our neutrality and everything, and we just said, we hope you guys work it out real soon, which is the way we're supposed to be, you know? There was no particular national interest on our part to be involved in that war. We weren't that threat. And besides, according to our Constitution, the only purpose of our government was to protect us against, to protect our lives, our liberty, and our property. If it didn't touch in those areas, we're out of it because the Constitution forbids that power to the government. Anyway, that's how the American scene was at that time. And people in finance and in government really had a different point of view because, you see, J.P. Morgan at that time was the bond broker for the British bonds. The British government was trying to raise money in addition to taxes. They were borrowing it through bonds, so they were issuing bonds. And J.P. Morgan was given the franchise to sell those bonds in America, and he sold a lot of them.
What advertisers have done is they've looked at Freud and psychology, and they've looked at the id, the ego, the superego, the thanatos urge. They've looked at the conflict that Freud discussed that human beings live in, this psychic tension, the impossibility to live up to the requirements of a superego, a perfect parent, the libidinal urges that drive us towards sexual impulses and gross behavior that we have been trained, and fortunately so, to harness and find socially acceptable ways to act out. Now, because they're aware of this tension, because they're aware of this heightened arousal, this anxiety that exists, they look at how they can tweak it, how they can play on it. If, for example, I can cause an arousal and associate that arousal with a product, just as with Pavlovian conditioning, you're more likely to remember that product, especially if I have repetition in it. I've learned in my life that what really matters is helping other human beings. And when I help somebody, I get that feedback that says, your life matters. This day mattered. You know, you're here, and it's good you're here. And that is a self-actualizing principle. To appreciate it, in my view, you have to first understand who you are, break free from this manipulation, stop the cycle that we all get caught in, and convolute the model. Convolute the model instead of looking, what is it that I can get? Maybe think back to Kennedy's words. It's what you can give. Don't ask what you can get from your country, but what you can give to your country. You know, don't get up in the morning with, how much do I get, but what can I give? I know this. It doesn't matter if you're an attorney, you're a doctor, you're a plumber, you're an auto mechanic. When you do your very best to help that person that comes to you as a customer, not to take their money, but to help them, to sincerely help them, you make a difference. Doing your very best is as close as you're ever going to get to being your very best. Cheating yourself by whatever means, whether it's on your taxes or not keeping your word or cheating yourself is cheating yourself. I'll say it again. Doing your best is as close as you'll ever get to being your very best, and there's very few of us in pursuit of that today.
The fact that I can speak here freely to you, to all of us, is a great, indescribable benefit of our society, one that we should defend tirelessly. The idea of free speech, free expression, is the best antiseptic against manipulation, against propaganda, against information operations. And that's why it's so critical that we as citizens always try to seek the truth, always try to be true to what's best for the country, e pluribus unum, versus what may be good for the short-term benefit, the idea of short-term gain, basically giving up freedoms. Giving up freedoms is never a good idea. And frankly, once you give them up, it's always harder to find them again, in the long run.
Excellent. One more question. We can keep it short. You've already basically answered
sure.
this, but we can, How do people, I mean, we're going to be talking to the audience now. How do the people who are learning about this, how do they defend themselves against strategic messaging that is not in their best interest?
How does one defend themselves against strategic information, propaganda? It's a very simple answer. Ask questions. Always check your source. I, as a public figure, am often having to speak publicly about issues and information. I look at everything. I've been criticized by my friends. Oh my God, you look at Fox News, you look at CNN. Absolutely. Because the false information being provided to the mainstream outlets means something. So why are they saying things a certain way? What does this really mean? Even false information means something. So that's why it's important to understand what's being said when it's being said. In addition to that then, you want to go to blogs, you want to go to original sources where people have first-hand experience. And you've got to combine all of these things to understand the world. The world is a complex entity. Frankly, one of the things which has happened that goes beyond, say, 2,000 years ago is the level and scope and availability of information. We are inundated with information. That's why it's even more important for individuals to sort through it as rapidly as possible, to seek the truth. And frankly, you know, people, I think, are smart enough to understand when something's true and something's not. If I guess you could call it your spidey sense. If something doesn't look right or smell right, it probably isn't right. So go with that. Try to understand why you feel that way. Always ask questions. Never accept simply what is presented at face value. Senator Trent Lott, spoke to me one time in the Fox Green Room when I first became a public figure in 2005. And his guidance to me has resonated. There's two points he wanted me to remember. He offered two points of advice. First point of advice was, in Washington, D.C., in this town where we're talking right now, it's never good to be right ahead of your time. Well, we found that out through Able Danger and the fact that we were so far on the cutting edge, people didn't want to hear what we had to say. And frankly, when it became public knowledge, people didn't want to talk about it. So that lesson is absolutely true. Senator Lott was absolutely correct. The second lesson he taught me, and this is something that I'm still learning today, he advised me that whatever they're talking about publicly, whatever the issue is in the news, whatever the information is about that topic, it's really about something else entirely. And this, I believe that to be true. Whatever the public face of something is, whatever they're talking about publicly, there's something else over here they're probably not looking at. And that's why it's important for individuals to look beyond what is being presented publicly and try to figure out for themselves what's really going on.
Secure your copy today at InfoWars.com.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
More than 60 movies and documentaries all in one place at InfoWars.com/show.
Yes, these men and their hypnotized followers call this a new order. It is not new, and it is not honor.